जय शिशुपाल परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान अभयचरण अरविंद भक्ति वेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। त्रिल प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की आनंद गौरी वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य शील हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौड़ भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगमाई की यमुनमाई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंद ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग ऑल ग्लोरीज श्री शील प्रभुपाद नमः विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रसाय भूतले श्रीमद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निधि नामिनी नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रजारिणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोऽभीष्टं स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदाद्यं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् सद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदां सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्विताश्च विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनि नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवीं गौरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणे नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिसिद्धान्त सरस्वती नामिने श्रीवर्षभानुदेवी दैदाय कृपाब्दये कृष्णसम्बन्धविज्ञानम् दायिने प्रभवे नमः माधुर्योज्ज्वल प्रेमाद्य श्रीरूपानुगभक्तिदा श्रीगौरकरुणाशक्ति विग्रहाय नमोऽस्तुते नमस्ते गौरवाणि श्रीमूर्तये दीनदारिणि रूपानुगविरुद्धाव सिद्धान्तद्वन्द्वहारिणि किशोराया साक्षात् वैराग्यमूर्तये विप्रलम्बरसाम्बोधे पादाम्बुजाय ते नमः भक्तिविनोदाय सच्चिदानन्दनामिने गौरशक्तिस्वरूपाय रूपानुगमराय ते गौराविभूमिस्त्वं निर्दिष्टा सज्जनप्रिया वैष्णव सर्वभौम श्रीजगन्नाथाय ते नमः पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो महावदन्याय कृष्णप्रेम प्रदाय ते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्ने गौरद्विषे नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशास्त्रियं हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगल्पदे गोपेश गोपिका कान्त राधा कान्त नमोऽस्तुते जयदां सुरदौ माम्बोर्मदीमत्सर्वस्वदाम्बोजौ राधा मदनमोहनौ कुन्दारण्यकल्पद्रुमाद श्रीमन्द्रत्नाकर सिंहासनस्थौ श्रीमन्द्राधा श्रीनगोविन्ददेवौ प्रष्टामिभि सेव्यमानौ स्मरामि श्रीमन्द्रासरसारम्भीमं श्रीवरदनस्थित कर्षन् वेणुस्वने गोपैर्गोपिनाथ श्रिये स्तुना तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुरे देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये भज श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्रीद्वैतगदाधार श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे
Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Pathaya Pradibodhidam Bhagavadam Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Gridhidam Purana Muninam Mandhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Pradavarshani Bhagavadim Ashtadishadhyayini Abhatvam Anusandadami Bhagavad Gide Bhavadveshani Sude Vyasa Vishala Buddhe Pullara Vindaya Dhamatra Netram Yenatvaya Bharata Daila Purna Prajwalido Jnanvaya Pradipa Pravinda Bhajiyadaya Totra Vetra Yavanae Jnana Mudraya Krishnaya Gita Pradaduhe Nama Sarva Upanishaduga Udugga Gopala Nandana Partho Valsa Sudhir Bhokta Rukdham Gita Pradam Mahat Vasudeva Sudam Devam Kamsa Chanura Mardanam Devagi Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadguram Vishmadrona the Najendra, the Janakan, the Haradi Lol Pala, Shalya Grahavadi, Krabena Vahini, Karnena Vila Gula, Ashwatthama, Vigarna Khoja Magara, Duryodhana Vartini, Sutirna Kalivanda Vairanadi, Kaivarta Keshava, Shalya Vaja Saroja Mamalam Gidartha Gandol Kanam, Anakhyana Gagesaram Harigada Sambodhana Bodhidam, Lokesh Janashal Padeira Haraha Baby Yaman Muda Buyad Bharata Bangaja Kalimala Pradhum Sina Shreyase Mugam Karudi Vajalam Bangam Lekhaide Girim Yalkabata Mahamande Paramananda Madhavam Yam Brahma Virunindra Rudra Virudaskun Vandini Vyai Savai Vede Sangamade Kramo Varshade Gayandiyam Samagaha Jana Vasidadgade Navanasa Vashandiyam Yogino Yasyanam Navidu Sura Sura Ganai Devaya Tasmai Nama.
In the 12th canto, when we discussed last Sunday, we have seen that Sukadeva Goswami, after having spoken Brahmavidya to Parikshit Maharaj, he left the scene. That's where we stopped. Sukadeva Goswami or Shukha Brahmarshi, he had only one intention, to get Parikshit Maharaj to realize himself, who he is. So many thousands of years ago, this happened. Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in what today we call it as Shukratal, that if you travel from Delhi to Meerut on the way, there is a town called Musafarnagar. Not far from there is this place Shukratal, and there, how is Shukha Brahmarshi spoken? Tvam sarvabhuta hridayam munimana tosmi. Sarvabhuta hridayam. Sarvabhuta hridayam. Sarvabhuta hridayam is Vyasaputra, Vedavyasa Maharshi's son. Shukadeva Goswami is sarvabhuta hridayam. That means he is present in everyone's heart. And he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to whom? To Parikshit, who is totally renounced from this world, completely detached from this world. On the river banks of Ganga River, on the river bank, he spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to him. And now if you go there, you will see that river has changed its direction quite a bit. And underneath the huge banyan tree, Śrīla Brahmarṣi spoke Śrīmad Bhāgavatam to Parīkṣit Maharaj and Bhagavat Tattvam. And we think that 5,000 years ago this has happened. But it is not the only reality. Reality is that that Śrīmad Bhāgavatam is still continuing in the hearts of so many people. All over the world, people who have taken to Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, they find that this Bhāgavatam, which Parīkṣit Maharaj spoke to Śrīla Brahmarṣi spoke to Parīkṣit, is still continuing, still spoken and heard by many, many devotees all around the world. Like one person asked a Mahatma that all these Puranas are history, is it not? History. But he said, Puranas are not actually history. It is his story. Krishna's story, that is. It is Krishna's story. Our story is called history. Our story is called history. Because that, and nobody will study this very long, very far. After a while, you throw it away. Because you know that this, our story is not of much interest to anybody, isn't it? The human population, their story, who is interested except fighting and killing each other? So, here, his story is referring to Krishna's story because it is the story of Krishna's grace, compassion and kindness to the conditioned souls, and every moment it appears in this world in a new form. Navanavam pratikshanam. Yet navadam upaidi tadaiva rupam ramaniyadayam. Bhagavatam will say like this about this story. Krishna's story is like that. Every moment it is new, and that is why people are finding it still interesting to read Srimad Bhagavatam. And every time when you look at it and you keep reading it, you will have some different new realization from that. And that is why it's called Ramaniyam. Ramaniyam means so beautiful that you keep realizing fresh aspects of the truth from Śrīmad Bhāgavatam. So thousands of years, although Śrīmad Bhāgavatam was spoken there, still Śrīla Brahmarṣi is speaking Śrīmad Bhāgavatam there. The symptom of that is all over the world, people are still reading Bhāgavatam. And all of us who are hearing Śrīmad Bhāgavatam is Parīkṣit. And we ourselves are those who are speaking, are the Sutas. Sutta Goswami is that. So this knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam, if it comes to us in realization form, if we realize that, then we also comes to the same stage as Sukadeva Goswami. Like the way Śrīla Brahmarṣi has realized it and spoke over a period of time by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, if we also come to the same understanding like Sukadeva Brahmarṣi, one day we will also reach that status. And that means we will also get ourselves dissolved in the knowledge of Krishna, in Krishna Tattvam, it is called. So, what is the difference between other Puranam and Srimad Bhagavatam? Other Puranam and Srimad Bhagavatam. Puranam difference is, so although it is called Bhagavata Mahapuranam, and even though we call it as Puranam, or we address it as a Srimad Bhagavata Puranam, it is actually Paramahamsa Samhita. You will notice that at the end of each chapter, Srimad Bhagavate Mahapurane Paramahamsyam Samhitayam, it will say like that. At the end of every chapter. Paramahamsyam Samhitayam. So although it is a Puranam, it is Paramahamsa Samhita as well. Paramahamsa Samhita means that knowledge which is in the heart of those who have realized the truth. Paramahamsas, their Samhita, it is their realization it is. So here, why have we given this name Puranam to Srimad Bhagavatam? Because people, when they hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they relish it, enjoys it by hearing Bhagavatam. And Another aspect of that is, after hearing this Srimad Bhagavatam properly, and once you have developed a taste for Srimad Bhagavatam, then you don't want to hear any other Puranam anymore. That is what will happen. No other Puranam will be of any interest to us after we hear Srimad Bhagavatam. You will see that in the Bhagavatam mentioned itself. If you look in the 12th canto, what it says about that, that in the last chapter, Rajandetavadanyani, 14th verse, Rajandetavadanyani Puranani Sadam Gane Yaval Bhagavatam Neva Shruyade Amrdasagaram. Bhagavatam speciality. Rajande Tavad Anyani Puranani Satam Gane Yavad Bhagavatam Neva Shruyade Amrdasagaram. In other words, so long as you haven't heard Srimad Bhagavatam, only up to that time the other Puranam will be of interest to people. The moment you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, from then on, the devotees, they will not be able to offer the same respect what they will offer to Bhagavatam. There is a special reason behind that. So, the realization, what they get from Srimad Bhagavatam, is not there, bliss that they experience from enjoying, studying Bhagavatam and hearing Bhagavatam, they do not get that from the other Puranam. And that's why it's spoken like that. Rajande tavad anyani puranani sadam gane yaval bhagavatam naiva shruyade amrda sagaram. Only thing is, we have to get it first. When you get that, only you will appreciate the greatness of Bhagavatam. And that is why it requires total commitment and dedication to study Bhagavatam. And many, many people in this world are taking advantage of Bhagavatam. Only thing, we may not be aware of that. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi. Next words. Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadrasa Amrita Tuttrasya Nanyatrasya Alrati Kochil. Then, what is the reason that after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, devotees may not be able to offer respects to other Puranas? That's explained in that verse. That Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyade. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the very core of essence of Vedanta philosophy. Sarva Vedanta Saram. All the Vedic literature, if you take the essence of that, and that essence is Srimad Bhagavatam. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyade. Tadrasal Amrita Truptasya Nanyatrasyal Riti Kuchil. So, and the rasam or the flow of that mellow that comes from the Bhagavatam, it's like the nectar, and when tasting that, one who is satisfied, and for him he won't find any taste for anything else, for any other Puranams. And that is the reason why they say that they will not be able to offer any respect to other Puranams afterwards. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyate. So, how long people will study the other Puranams? Till they study Srimad Bhagavatam. Once you have developed a taste for Srimad Bhagavatam, then Nanyatrasya Riti Kochil, you won't find any taste elsewhere. And your taste won't go anywhere else. What is the reason for that? There is a reason behind that. That will start with the first verse itself in the Bhagavatam. That then, and it is an amazing verse, that is the first verse. Yeah. Janmadesya That verse. And to understand that verse is very, very difficult. Extremely difficult. And that is why when you look into the commentaries of the Bhagavatam, you will find how different Vamshidhara Goswami, he has commented on that one verse in 100 different ways. 100 different ways he has commented on that. Sridhara Swami's commentary goes so extensive commentary on that verse. We won't understand that only till you keep reading and trying to see how these great devotees had been affected by that verse. It begins with Vedantaru Sutram verse itself, isn't it? Janma Adhya Seda. That is the first, second sutram in the Brahma Sutram. It begins with that. Satyam Param Dhimahi. It ends, isn't it? So that particular verse, the first verse in the Bhagavadam, the expansion of that verse is the remaining Bhagavadam. If you get to the deeper level, you'll know this. That the expansion of that first verse itself, in an expanded form, is the remaining Bhagavadam. And that you will see in other books as well, that in the books related to Ramana Maharshi Sadarshana, for example, he will also find there the same thing, that they have. In one verse, he said what he had to say in the first verse. And the remaining whole of Sadarshanam is an expansion of that first verse. Message is very straightforward. And similarly, if you understand this first verse in the Bhagavadam properly, you will understand Bhagavadam, what Bhagavadam has to say. But the difficulty is understanding that verse and the various commentaries and purports that's been written on that verse. Even Srila Prabhupada's commentary, you can see many pages he has written on that first verse, because everybody realizes the importance of that first verse. So, Satyam Param Dhimahi, Sadarshanam also, he says Satyam Param Dhimahi. So, it's an amazing verse, that first verse, isn't it? Because the reason why it is said it is so, verse with a very high depth of knowledge, realization, everything, because in meaning also it is highly esoteric. Not only esoteric, the depth of that, what the verse is carrying, the sound of that verse itself also, apart from that, the mood in which it has been compiled, plus when you also don't understand it, you realize it, how difficult it is to know that first verse. Our scholarship, cleverness or knowledge, all these things, with this you can't open that verse. You can't open that verse. And similarly in the Sadarshanam also you will see the same thing. And this verse is sufficient to even for great scholars completely gets baffled by the way it has been structured, that verse is structured. So you will see there, that is why in the verse itself it says, Mukhyandiyat Suraya. What does that mean? Suraya means learned people, even they are Mukhyandi. Mukhyandi means they are baffled or they are completely perplexed by this truth. So, if you give this verse to somebody and tell them to explain that, even they will people will find that very, very difficult. That is the nature of that verse. And actually it is not a verse, it's a mantra it is. That is a mantra. So, and because they say that the verse is like a screen or like a screen. Screen means to understand that verse, one needs a certain degree of subtlety. Subtlety. Sushma buddhi. Sushma. Subtle knowledge, subtle understanding is necessary. And it is because, why it has been written like that is, Vedavyas does not want everybody to understand. He thinks that only those who have got that subtle understanding of the truth need to understand, need to get that verse. And therefore, and that is why he says there, that is why it is spoken in a covered form. The truth is spoken in a covered form. You see that? That is the beauty of that verse. It is spoken in a very covered form. Not directly telling you the message. Instead, whole thing is spoken in a very covered pattern. Muhyandiyat Suraya. And it says there the essence of Vedic knowledge, the ultimate message of the Vedas, is always covered. It is not spoken so freely. It's not like an advertisement or where they want to get you the message to. No, it is spoken in a very covered way. Those who have got that subtle vision, only they need to hear and only they will understand. That is why that verse is little bit more subtle than anything else. So, Nigamagalpadarorgalidam phalam Shukamukhadamrudadravasam yudam Pibada Bhagavatam rasamalayam Muhuraho rasigabhu vibhaguvaha Bhavugaha. That he says there, Pibada Bhagavatam, keep drinking Bhagavatam. Pibada Bhagavatam, Pibada Bhagavatam. Why do they say like that? Because rasam pibadaha, there is rasam in there, nectar there. Muhuraho pibada, again pibada. Alayam pibada, till you experience that layam, taste. Resigaha pibadaha, that you will experience that nectar in the form of rasam. Bhuvi pibadaha, again you drink that. Bhavugaha pibadaha, that you will clearly come to that point. Bhagavadam rasam nigamagalpadaror galidam bhalam. That this beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam is that all the Vedic literature, if you churn the whole literature and from there the nectar has been taken out and poured in front of us. Because you know Vedam is compared to like a huge tree, Kalpakavraksham. And a tree, this is all the way the Vedic authorities talk about that. Sometimes you will see this, it's quite practice to talk about a parrot comes and sits on the tree. Parrot comes and sits on the tree. And that parrot is not from the earth. Not from this earth. It's a parrot from another world. Another world. And in the Vedam, they will call it as Hema Vihangam. Hema Vihangam. There are so many things which we don't understand. But Vedic knowledge is such that in Vedam it is indicated, it is called Hema Vihangam. And you will see this often referred to in the Mahabharata, this Hema Vihangam. The nature of this particular parrot, it's always flying. It's always flying there. Vihangam means that it's flying in the sky. It's flying in the sky. Apparently they're saying that it's always flying in the space. It's flying in the space. And when it delivers the eggs, when the eggs come from that parrot, it will take a while for that eggs to come and touch the earth. To come and touch the earth. But before the eggs come and reach this earthly planet, the egg will break open and the baby will come out from that. And the baby will fly off before it touches the ground. It's called Hema Vihangam. Before it touches the ground, it will fly off. And the baby comes out and it will look down. And as soon as it knows that it's going to fall into the ground, it won't touch, it will fly off. It will fly off. And it will not touch the ground. It will not touch the ground. And that is why this particular parrot, you will see this is spoken in the Bhagavatam also referred to that, that this particular parrot is the one which comes and touches, it touches the Vedic literature. It touches the Vedic literature in the sense that that it does not belong to this world. In other words, it's always liberated. It's always liberated. Adhyalpa Ramayanam is spoken by that parrot. You will see Vedavyasa Maharshi's another compilation. Ramayanam is spoken, Adhyatma Ramayanam is spoken through that parrot. Through that parrot. So, always liberated. That parrot is a liberated state. And before it touches the ground, it will escape. It will escape. And what it means is that it has not come to this world after suffering everything what like us in this world. 10 months in the womb and going through all the miseries and then what you read in the third canto. Not in that way. It was born. It's always liberated. Therefore, that vihangam, hema vihangam is addressed as always liberated. And that parrot has come and sat on this tree. Sat on this tree. And it is that parrot that is spoken Srimad Bhagavatam. That is speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. That is why we say Shugam Brahmarshi is speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. Nigamagalpadarorgalidam phalam Shukamukhatamurdadravasam yudam. Shugam Brahmarshi is considered to be like a parrot. Why? Because the reason is that a parrot, when it touches a fruit, that fruit will definitely be very sweet. When the parrot touches the sweet, isn't it? So, suppose we go and buy some fruits from the shop and bring it. It may or may not be good. Mostly it's not. With all our good judgment, we buy it and bring it. It appears good, looks color, fully ripened and all, and sometimes when you cut open, you see it's not proper. It's not proper. It doesn't have the taste for the fruit. It's not ripened properly. But you can't cheat this parrot. This parrot. And like the way when we buy the fruits, outwardly it looks good. But you can't eat it because it's not so good, isn't it? But this this fruit, what is touched by this parrot, it is like this, that if you taste it, it will be very good. It will be very, very good, very tasty. Similarly, in Vedam, there are so many things spoken. So many things spoken. And, like for example, there is Vedam and there is Upavedam. Supplementary Vedam. So, like for example, how to make a lot of money. It is spoken in the Vedam. How to make a lot of money. Then, how to have children. There are mantra for that. If you want to have a large number of prajani, then there are mantra for that in the Vedam. To destroy your enemies, there are mantra in the Vedam. And suppose you are doing farming or agriculture, your agriculture to develop nicely, to have good yield from the land, there are mantra for that. Then if you want a boy or a girl as a son or daughter, whatever, there are mantra for that. Like this, there are so many mantras in the Vedam. In the middle of all these things in the Vedam, there is Brahma Vidya. There is Brahma Vidya. But you have to know how to get Brahma Vidya out of the whole thing. Out of the whole thing. And that one has to learn. And if somebody takes it out and gives it to us, Brahma Vidya alone, it will be very convenient. Is it not? Because Vedic knowledge is so vast. Like we are talking about Vedam last Sunday also, I think, or the day before, I can't remember. I mentioned this, that people think that the knowledge in the Vedam is for other purposes. Like I was saying about, if you want to study, if you want to know geography, you have geographical magazines and so many books. Don't study Bhagavatam for that purpose. Is it not? You don't come to Bhagavatam to know the geography of the creation. So similarly, Vedam will talk about a lot of things. A lot of things it will say. But you have to know how to extract from that what you need in this life. That is the important thing. Important thing that is, you can see, when Mahabharata was written, 125,000 verses, Acharya Swamiji took only Bhagavad Gita from that and commented on that. Only on the Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, from Vedam also, you have to learn to take the essence from there. And in Vedam, what is important that you have to know, and the parrot is capable of going and touching that. Parrot picks up from that what is important. Lot of our people have got a lot of problems like this. They are saying Ayurvedam is Vedam. Archery, Dhanurvedam is Vedam. Jyotisham, astrology is Vedam. Niruktam, Kalpam. Ayurvedam, Dhanurvedam, Jyotisham, Vyakaranam, Niruktam, Kalpam, grammar. All these are supplementary Vedas. Now, if you get attracted by any of those things and start thinking, oh, it's all Vedam, so let me take that on board, that is no good. You are not getting what you need to get. What we need is, from the Vedic literature, is the message of Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya is the one that we are looking for, the knowledge of the soul, isn't it? So, Nigamakalpatarorgalidam phalam sugamukhad amrutadravasam yudam. Nigamakalpatarorgalidam phalam sugamukhad amrutadravasam yudam. And it is like a kalpataru, kalpakavruksham. Which one? Vedam. That kalpataru, nigamakalpataru, it says. Saw the word? Nigamakalpataru. Kalpataru means that whatever you want, according to your sankalpam, Vedam will give it to you. That is it. Vedam contains everything. Vedam contains everything. What I was saying was that we have our material sciences, what we have developed in this world, like different science subjects and all that, technology and whatever that is. And then we are going back to the Vedam and searching and comparing these two things. That is useless. It's a waste of time. What we have to know, Vedam has something unique to offer which is not available in our modern world. That is the science of the soul. Science of the soul. So, and therefore, there is a problem here, if you understand this. What you are in your mind desiring, Vedam will give it to you. It's a very dangerous thing. Suppose in your mind you have a particular sankalpam. Sankalpa means something in your deep inside your heart you have some desire. And you are approaching Vedic literature with that motif. Then Vedam will give it to you. Vedam will give it to you. Problem is, we don't know what will be that sankalpam inside us sometimes. We won't know that. Sometimes we don't have a good sankalpam. Bad sankalpam we may have. Not very auspicious ones. That means you will go, move away from the path. You will go away from the path. But Vedam will give that to you because it's a kalpataru. That's why it's mentioned like that. Nigama kalpataror galidam. This kalpataru has got this problem. Whatever you ask, it will give it to you. It will give it to you. That is the reason sannyasis are not allowed after taking sannyasam. That they are not allowed to study a major part of the Vedam because of this problem. That suppose you don't know what thoughts will come inside, suddenly some desire comes inside, and then you go into the Vedic literature thinking that if I can get that fulfilled desire. Say for example, somebody has got some strong inimical relationship with somebody, enmity towards someone, and he knows that there is certain mantras in the Vedam available for utilizing to destroy somebody life. And even after taking sannyasam, if the mind goes in that direction, then what will you do? It will happen. It can happen. For this reason precisely, sannyasis are not allowed to touch a major part of the Vedam. They are not allowed to get involved in that. Particularly the earlier parts of the Vedam, Purva Bhagam. They have no authority. That means they should not study it. What will happen if you study that? Just like a mother gives food to all the children. Is it not? Food to all the children. So similarly, Vedam is like a mother. she will give you the knowledge of the material world as well, and activities of this material world. And suppose you have desires inside to fulfill some material desires, your attention will go in that direction instead of going towards Brahmavidya. There are mantras in the Vedam for fighting war and winning the war. There are mantras in that form. And if those mantras, if you get interested, then your desire for liberation will change. You will lose there. So one who is looking for freedom from this material life, material existence, and come out of this material body, such a person, he should not look into those aspects of the Vedam and start studying them. And it is only for this reason that Vedam has forbidden sannyasis, that so many parts of Vedam are not allowed to be touched by them. They are not allowed to touch them. So, if you, before you took sannyasam, you can study if you want. You can do that. But once you have come to the Nurti Margam means the process of liberation process, then you should not go back to that. Because why? Kalpataru. Nigama Kalpataru it is. Kalpataru. Because if you sangalpam, in your sangalpam, if it is there, the tree will offer you that fruit. Tree will offer you that fruit. So here, Bhagavatam is saying here that Nigama Kalpataror Galidam Bhalam, that from that tree a beautiful fruit has fallen. And that fruit is not saying fallen, it has started leaking. When the tree fruit, sometimes when they get very ripe, it breaks open and the juice starts flowing from that, isn't it? And that juice is shukamukha tamrda drevasam yutam. In the second verse, you see that? Nigama kalpatarorgalidam bhalam shukamukhad amrda dravasam yutam. Amrda dravasam yutam means that dravam, like a liquid, it is flowing. From where? From Shukabrahmarshi's face. It's flowing. It's flowing like a liquid. It is flowing. The important thing here, the language of the Srimad Bhagavatam, what they are saying, the Acharyas are saying this, that it is not laugiyam, not the language what we use in our normal conversation. It is also not the Vedic language, the language used in the Vedam. That is also, it's also not that language. It is actually called, it is not even the language what Prakrita Bhasha. Prakrita Bhasha means that has been used by the people in conversation. None of them. What is it then? It is Samadhi Bhasha. Samadhi Bhasha. In realized state, it is spoken. Everything is spoken in the realized state. That is why it's called Samadhi Bhasha. Vallabhacharya mentions this. It is nothing but Samadhi Bhasha. So, therefore, Shukamukha Namrata Dravasam Yudam. What is that juice, what is flowing from that tree? Amrudadravasamyudam means that state of experience when you don't feel fear of death, that there is no thing called a death. Coming to that stage, that is Amrudadravasamyudam. An experience inside, like Parikshit experienced that, there is no thing called a death. We live in this world on the fear of death throughout life, is it not? But a stage comes in life that fear has gone from inside. That is flowing from that fruit. How you experience deathlessness. Now we are living in the fear of death all the time, is it not? But there is a stage called deathlessness, that you live in this world without fear of death. That fear of death is gone, vanished from inside. And that is what is that knowledge, that state, And the essence of that is knowledge. Essence of that is knowledge. And that knowledge is knowledge of the soul. Knowledge of the soul. Amrita Drava Samyutta. So, sometimes you have to bite the fruit, is it not? And in order to bite the fruit, you need the teeth to bite the fruit. So, just like, suppose, if you have no teeth, and suppose if I give you some sugar cane, as it is brought from the field, sugar cane field, you know how it is, sugar cane is, what will you do with it? If you don't have the teeth, you can't get it from the sugar cane, is it not? That's the situation. That you need the teeth to bite the sugar cane and to get the juice out of it. And only when you get the juice, you really relish it. Isn't it? Sugar cane juice. So, similarly, and then again, if you have got diabetes, then you can't take it. Also, another problem. So, but this particular fruit, Nigamakalpadaroor Galitam Phalam, it doesn't have any problem. It can be given to anybody, even sick people or healthy people, and amrutadravasam yudham. Then this Bhagavadam, you can keep drinking, no matter which state you are. Pipada Bhagavadam, keep on drinking Srimad Bhagavadam. And unless you keep drinking, you won't get that juice from that. You won't get the juice from that. That is the process. That is why people who are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, they won't leave it. Once they have taken it, then they have started getting something from that, they continuously keep reading it all the time, reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So, how long should one read Bhagavatam? How long should one drink? Alayam pibada. See, every word selected so carefully. Nigama kalpataror galidam phalam shukamukhad amrutadravasam yudam pipada bhagavadam up to when? Rasam alayam pipada till you get completely soaked into that rasam of the rasam of Bhagavadam, till we get completely soaked into that. Up to that time, alayam pibada, there are two meanings in there mentioned in the Ajahn Swami's, Kshidara Swami's commentary also. General meaning one, alayam pibada, and then in the sampradayam, in the traditions also says that till even after death, keep on drinking this Bhagavadam. Simple terms, if you say, keep on drinking it. And alayam means, what does this alayam means? Layam means that you get dissolved in it. Completely dissolved in it. What does that mean? These are all spoken in a way, but behind that, there is a shastram behind it, when it is spoken in that way. For example, that layam means to dissolve. What are we dissolving? Our ahankaram, isn't it? Till the whole ahankaram goes away from inside. It is like, ahankaram is like a mountain inside, in each one of us. And that ahankaram has to dissolve one day. There is no other way. It has to go. Till it gets dissolved. In the Vedantic language, they will put it like this, that Triputi means that we have now Drik, Drishyam, Drashtavat. Isn't it? Drashtava is a person who is seeing. Drik is what is being seen, the object being seen. And Drishyam is the process of seeing. These three things are existing in all of us now, at the moment. Is it not? We are looking at the world. I am looking at the world. And I am Drik. I am Drashtavat. The world is the Drik. And the process I am seeing that is called a drishyam. Not only these eyes, this means. It is spoken in reference to drikha, drishyam and drashta. But with all other five senses, all five senses it applies. Is it not? I am enjoying tasting the food. The food is the drishyam. The person who is tasting the food is the drikha, and the process of tasting is drishyam. Drashtava, drishyam, drikha. Yeah. So, drikha, yes. So, in this way, everything, all five senses are only busy with these things in life. So, drikha, drishyam, drashtava. Three things existing all the time. When all these three things goes away, and there is only one thing, when it comes to that, that is called a layam. This verse is very Vedantic, that verse, first verse. If you read through all the commentaries on that verse, you will see the depth of that verse. Nigamakalpataroorgalidam bhalam Shugamukhadamurdadravasam yutam Pipada Bhagavatam rasam alayam Pipada Muhuraho-resiga bhuvi bhavukaha. So, how long should you drink Bhagavatam? Till this layam happens. Which layam? Drikka drishyam drashta goes away. There is only one thing. Drikka drishyam drashtava is only due to our ajnanam inside, avidya inside. That is what is segregating these three. Actually, it is very interesting when you get into these things. A lot more interesting than what you think about it. Drikka drishyam drashtava, these three walls have been built in us. And we are lying there. In the samadhi state, what happens? Drikka drishyam drashtava goes away, which is called tripudi. Tripudi means these three triangle existence. It's called triangle existence. The triangle disappears and there is only one dot there. One dot there. There is no triangle anymore. Triangle is artificial. It's not real. It is due to the presence of the senses and due to the ajnanam inside, avidya inside, I am operating in these three, drikka drishyam drashtava level. So, muharaho pibada, again pibada, resigaha pibada. But you have to know how to rasam, to extract that juice from Bhagavatam. So, you shouldn't remain dry while remain studying Bhagavatam, particularly in Srimad Bhagavatam. You should not remain in a dry state all the time. Whatever that is spoken in the Upanishads, the Vedantam that is spoken in the Upanishads, and what is spoken in the Vedanta Sutram or Brahma Sutram, that is the same thing what Bhagavatam is also saying. It's not different. What is spoken in the Upanishads, what is spoken in the Brahma Sutram, that's the same thing what Bhagavatam is also talking about. And in order to show to us that is the reason that to show to us it is not different from Brahma Sutram, that is why it began with that Janmadhyasayataha. That statement. Bhagavatam began with that, you see. It's a straight away the second sutram from the Brahma Sutram. Janmadhyasayataha. First one is Adhado Brahmanyasa, second one is Janmadhyasayataha. So, they started, Vedavyas created this, took that sutram from Vedanta Sutram and began Bhagavatam, writing Bhagavatam. So, if we speak Srimad Bhagavatam like a Shastram, like Vedanta Sutram, then nobody will listen. Nobody will find it easy to listen to it, if it is spoken purely as a Shastram. So, whenever Vedantam is spoken, if it is spoken as a philosophy, and then it will be experienced by the listener, it will look as though it's very dry for them. And therefore, it will remain something far away from them. They won't be able to connect with that. So, therefore, what they have done, what Vedavyasa has done basically is that somehow or the other, that knowledge of the self, he wants to connect it with us. Somehow or the other, connect it with us. And make it in a way that it is relishable for us. If it is spoken purely like the way it is in the Vedanta Sutram or in the other books, Upanishads, not many people will be able to listen to it. Because that purity is not there. It's biggest problem is the purity. Because first thing is, remember that one comes to spiritual life only when there is some chitta shuddhi inside. A certain degree of chitta shuddhi inside. Otherwise you will see, if the chitta shuddhi is not there, they won't be able to stay in spiritual life very long. As I mentioned before, that many people say, I don't need to hear Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam. People say like that, because I am very pure. Why do I have to listen to Bhagavadam or Bhagavad Gita? The symptom of a person who is pure, if you have real purity inside, the first symptom is you will have a taste for Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam. You will, in a natural way, there will be some taste inside. If there is no, there are a lot of good people in this world. You can see the many, many good people. When you talk to them, they don't do anything wrong in life. They don't do anything wrong in life. They live according to dharma in this world, morals and everything. There are people like that. But they will say, they may say to you that I have no interest in this Bhagavad Gita. Why do I have to? I'm living a proper life in this world. And they are not able to take to Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam. And that is the reason is this. Chitta Shuddhi hasn't happened. Although they may say that they are pure, from the Shastri point of view, they are not pure. If anybody says that he has Chitta Shuddhi, symptom of that is that he will have a natural attraction for Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam. In a natural way, he'll feel that very much inside. And therefore, when it is spoken in a dry, philosophical way, it is not attractive to ordinary people who have no chitta shuddhi inside. Only those who have that high degree of purity inside, they will straight away go to Upanishads, they will go to Vedanta Sutram and Vedic literature which are talking about the truth, and they'll have an attraction for that in a natural way. So that is why ordinary people who do not have that chitta shuddhi, they will find it difficult. So as soon as Vedantam becomes very dry philosophy, it will remain far away from us, for ordinary people, and no connection with that. So these parrots, when it is spoken through the parrot's form, that idea is that somehow or the other develop some taste for that, to make it more sweet. That's what the parrot does. If the parrot is bitten a fruit, you can take it for granted that fruit will be very sweet. Very sweet. So, so many literature has been compiled since then in the form of a parrot reciting that. Parrot reciting that. So, So the parrot has got intoxicated by drinking this message, and she sang that, and that is why, as a messenger, everything is recited through a parrot. Bhagavadam, Ramayanam also. And therefore, once a devotee, a little child, only a year old, they brought the child in front of Lord Shiva's deity in Chidambaram. They brought the baby in front of the deity. As soon as the baby saw the deity, baby laughed in a big way. And why is that? When the purity inside of that child, that suddenly the child experiences certain ecstasy while seeing the deity. So, all the great poets also, they utilize their poetic ability to express the feelings they have for the deity. You will see in the Bhagavad Gita, a statement, Kavim Puranam Anishasitaram. I think it is in the 9th chapter. 8th, I think. Kavim Puranam Anishasidharam, it says, Bhagavad Gita. And here, Shukamukhan Amrudadrava Samyudam, it says, Shukavag Amrudam. That means that Amrudam, that nectar, that comes from Sukadeva Goswami's mouth, which is called, that nectar is called Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya. Pipada Bhagavadam, Pipada Bhagavadam, Rasam, Alayam Pipada, Muharaho Pipada. Keep drinking this nectar that has come from Sukadeva Goswami's lips. And after that, you cannot keep on taking the food from the world anymore. After drinking this nectar of Bhagavadam, topics from the world won't be of any interest to us. You won't find any taste for that. That is the difficulty. That is the difficulty. Muhuraho pibada, resigaha pibada. Only thing is, resigaha pibada, that tasting it and enjoying it is important. Shrimad Bhagavadam. And that is important for Bhagavadam. It's not like Brahma Sutram. It's not like Upanishads. For difference between Brahma Sutram, Upanishads and Bhagavadam is, while studying Bhagavadam and reading Bhagavadam, you have to relish it. The taste has to develop. Whereas it is not expected from Upanishads and the Brahma Sutram. And the Brahma Sutra. So, Adhyalpa Vidya, that means this Brahma Vidya, tasting that and relishing it is a very high level of experience. Very high level of experience. Resigaha Pipada, not after going to the heavenly planets you enjoy there. Bhuvi Pipadaha, Bhavugaha Pipadaha, Bhagavatam Rasam, or the taste of Bhagavatam. That in order to, for example here, you remember, this Bhagavatam what we are studying now, where is it coming from? It's coming from Naimisharanyam. It's not coming from the Shukatali. It is actually coming from Naimisharanyam. That is where Srimal Bhagavatam was spoken between Sudha Shaunaga Samvadam. It is Sudha Shaunaga Samvada Bhagavatam, is that what we are studying now. These books what we have got is all between Sudha Goswami and Shaunaga Rishi. That is the discussion here. Now, what has happened? Sukadeva Goswami's disciple is Sudha. Is it not? His disciple is Sudha. So, it's in Naimisharanyam. What has happened was, Sudha spoke Srimal Bhagavatam and he is not a direct disciple, he is an indirect disciple of Sukadeva Goswami. Why do we say that he is an indirect disciple? Because direct disciple is Parikshit, to whom it was spoken, is it not? In Shukratal, when it was spoken, when Sukadeva Goswami spoke Bhagavatam, he was the spiritual master and Parikshit sat there and listened, directly took instructions from him. He was a direct disciple. And there were so many others who were sitting there, but keeping Parikshit as the listener, it's being instructed to Parikshit directly. It's spoken to Parikshit directly. After it was spoken, Sukadeva Goswami looked into all the audience who were present there. All the audience who were present there. What did he find? You know, when you have a mobile phone, and you left it somewhere. You don't know where you left it. In the house. So what you generally do? If you have another mobile, you ring. And then you will hear where it's ringing and you'll go and get it out. In the same way, what happened here was, Sukadeva Goswami sat there and looked everywhere. The whole audience was present there. So suddenly, after he has spoken that fifth chapter, Brahmavadesham, He experienced himself a vibration coming from one corner. Where was it coming from? Sudha Goswami. It was coming from Sudha Goswami. Just like this mobile phone. He heard from one corner. There were thousands of sages who were present there. But this one person has picked up the message well. Like the way Parikshit has picked up. He has picked up the message, what he has spoken. This Brahmavadesham had hit him as well. So, when that vibration comes, actually he is only talking to Parikshit Maharaj. But he realized that there is another person who has got it in the whole assembly. He has got it, the message. And Parikshit Maharaj has already become Purna Vastu. Complete he is, after self-realized, isn't it? That is why you will see there, he is called Brahma Bodho Mahayogi. You see there in the Bhagavatam, how he is addressed there? In that chapter, when you look, you will see there, Brahma Bodho Mahayogi, he says there. It's a very unusual way of addressing a person. 10th verse, 6th chapter. That is being spoken about him by Sudha Goswami. He is saying about Parikshit. He says, 10th verse, Prakule Barhishyasi so asino Ganga Gula Udang Mukha Brahma Bodho Mahayogi Nisanga Chinna Samshaya. He has become Brahma Buddha. Brahma Buddha. He has become Brahman. Mahayogi. Great soul. Mahayogi. Brahma Buddha. Mahayogi. He has become Brahma Buddha. Mahayogi. Krishna says that, isn't it? Brahma Buddha Prasannatma. That stage has happened to him. And Sudha Goswami sends that in Parikshit. That's what he is saying there. That Sudha Goswami is saying there, that by now Shukha Brahmarshi has gone. He has gone from the scene. Parikshitavi Rajarshya Rajarshi Almanyal Panama Alpana 9th verse. Samadhaya Param Dadhya Aspandasur Yathatata. So what did he do after he left? He left that Parikshit Maharaj, with his realizations, mind is gone. Mind is finished. There is no more mind after that. Mind has gone and dissolved itself in the Pratyagalpa. Pratyagalpa means the Antaryami inside. And with that, control of the pranan, whole pranan, flow of pranan has stopped. And he sat there like a tree without any movement. He sat there and no more connection with the world outside. Samadhaya param dadya aspandasu yathatata. Aspandasu means that asu means pranan. Aspandam means pranan is not working anymore inside. There is no movement of the pranan inside. It is at that time he is saying, Prakule Barkhishyasino Gangakula Udhangmukha. That directly, that Dharma grass is put on the ground and facing the north. He sat there and sat in that yoga state and completely realized inside, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, I'm not intelligence, I'm not the senses, and full realization of the self without any connection with the body in the Nirvigalpam state. Brahma Bodho Mahayogi Nisanga Chinna Samshaya. Without any doubts inside, completely in realization of the self, he sat there as Brahmam. Brahma Bodho Mahayogi Nisanga Chinna Samshaya, it says there, is it not? So that Brahma Buddham state. This was noticed by who? Sudha Goswami. Sudha Goswami noticed that. And so he noticed Parikshit Maharaj. Sudha Goswami noticed Parikshit Maharaj. And when he saw Parikshit, he understood this, that Parikshit is now in that Brahman realized state. In that Brahman realized state. So that is where this incident happened in Shukratal. This happened in Shukratal. And what did our Shukha Brahmarshi do before he left? He said, he will speak Srimal Bhagavatam later in Naimisharanyam. Those who want to hear Bhagavatam again can go there. Shukha Brahmarshi said before he left. As soon as he understood that, Sudha Goswami has got Bhagavatam with him. He said that Sudha will go to Naimisharanyam and will speak Srimal Bhagavatam there. Whoever wants to hear Bhagavatam can go. Saying that, he walked away. So, he actually, Sudha Goswami was initiated into Bhagavatam by Shukra Brahmarshi in Shukratal. But the first time he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam in Naimisharanyam. And it is through that Sutam, Sutta Goswami, that we are now hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And through him, this river, Bhagavata river, Ganga river called Bhagavatam, started flowing, or it's also called Jnana Ganga, Ganga river of knowledge, that is. And it will flow from Sutta Goswami. And he blessed Sutta Goswami with that benediction. And Sukadeva Goswami moved away from there, and from then on Sutta Goswami started speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is from Sutta Goswami this Saptaham has started, speaking 7 days. Shukra Brahmarshi didn't speak Saptaham. He had 7 days time, he spoke and left. It was not organized. But Sudha Goswami started speaking in the 7 day system. 7 day system means there is a systematic way of speaking in the Bhagavatam for Saptaham. That means the first day where you should finish, second day where you should finish, third day where you should finish, fourth day where you should finish, similarly fifth day, sixth day, and finally seventh day. What you have to. And there is a systematic way of doing it. And at the end of that, there is a system called Avabhradasnanam. The speaker and all the listeners are supposed to go to a holy river, bathe in the river, Avabhradasnanam it is called. The whole process is discussed in the Puranam. In the Puranam you will see there. That anyway, we will not discuss that because let's go back to Shukra Brahmarshi state here. So, Sudha Goswami is saying to Shaunagarishi and others who are there that when they started Bhagavatam, what we have to look at, that for next 7 days, because you know this, Bhagavatam was spoken in the Naimisharanyam. There, this satram was going on, which lasting thousands of years, it says there. Is it not? Thousands of years, that satram was going on in Naimisharanyam. And it is right in the middle of this satram that one day Sudha Goswami walked in. The satram is going on. Thousands of years it's going on. Sahasra Samamasata. If you look into the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, you will see this. This Bhagavatam is going on for thousands of years. Satram is going on. Satra means what? Satra means, you have to know what satra means. Satra means that number of people present there, they are engaged in what is called Brahma Vijaram. Brahma Vijaram means Alpa Vijaram or inquiry about the soul. That means one person will speak, others will listen. And then another person will speak and everybody else will listen. This is called Satram. So in Satram, that is a, you can see there that in the, if you look into the first chapter, fourth verse, Naimishe Animisha Kshetre Hrishaya Shaunagadaya Satram Surgaya Lokaya Sahasra Samamasata. Satram Surgaya Lokaya Sahasra Samamasata. Naimishe Nimisha Kshetre Animisha Kshetre Hrishaya Shaunagadaya. Rishis and Shaunagar Rishi, he is their head of all the Rishis present there. And they were performing this Satram there, discussing about Alma, about the soul. They are discussing. We are discussing God exists or not, isn't that? That's our discussion. What a discussion it is. To discuss, does God exist? What does your religion say? What does your religion say? And arguing about it. They are not discussing that. What they are discussing about the soul. Alma exists, they don't have any doubt about that. That's the difference. They are discussing it and trying to understand that Atma, what is Atma means, and what is that living force within everyone, what's operating. So, you can see, Naimishe Animisha Kshetre Hrishaya Shaunagadaya Satram Surgaya Lokaya Sahasra Samamasada. Sahasra Samamasada says, thousands of years it's going on. There's a whole history behind that, how it started in Naimisharanyam. That will come to that later. So here, what happened was that when Sudha Goswami arrived there to speak Srimad Bhagavatam, they all got up. although Suta is lower than them in every aspect by his birth, and Suta is not allowed to study Vedam because by the hierarchy he is not even a Rishi. We call him Suta Goswami, but the Rishis who are present there, they are more learned than him. They are more learned than him. They have studied Vedam, Vedic literature, everything they know. But when Suta Goswami came there, they all welcomed him. Why did they do that? Because these Rishis knew that he has the blessing from Shuka Brahmarshi. Sudeva Goswami has given the blessing to him that you are authorized to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So naturally then you have no other choice. You have to listen to him. So when he came there, they welcomed him wholeheartedly, without any reservations. Otherwise he is not qualified to speak. Sudeva Goswami is not qualified to speak. But because he had the blessings of his teacher, Shuka Brahmarshi, that he has got it, Bhagavatam, he should speak, and he will speak, and it is Shuka Brahmarshi's desire and it is his decision. So they have no choice, they have to honor it. All the Shavinaga and the other Rishis were present there, so they welcomed him very well and told him and asked him, we have been waiting for a long time, and when will you start speaking Srimad Bhagavatam? This is how they put it to him. Not the other way. Normally in this world, what do we do? If the speaker comes, oh, why have you come? What do you want to do? We'll ask like that, isn't it? When you say like that, it has no attraction in that. It doesn't look good. But here, when Suta Goswami walked in, the first thing they said, welcomed him and told him, when can we start Bhagavatam? We have been waiting for this for such a long time. That is how they received him. You'll see the difference there. Shuka mukha tamrudadrava samyudam pibada bhagavadam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavukaham. So, they were saying to him that, the Rishis were saying to him that for next 7 days, let's hear Srimad Bhagavatam from you, they said to him. But we have always difficulty. Suppose in the 7 days' time, suppose death happens, then what do? Anybody can die and go any minute, isn't it? They lose that opportunity. So what did Shavanagrishi say to them? Shavanagrishi said, don't get frightened. Don't get frightened. We have invited Yamadharma Raja also to come and to listen Bhagavatam. He is also sitting there. Yamadharma Raja also came and sat there. The way they did that was, what they call it as kurcham. Kurcham means, with the darbha grass, is a special way of offering a seat to Yamadharma Raja. They offered that to him. So they put the kurcham and told Yamadharma Raja to sit there. And they said that nobody will leave the body. At least next 7 days, nobody will leave the body. These things are well-known things in the Bhagavatam. It is in the first canto. If you look into the it's in the first canto where it says, if you look in the 16th chapter, eighth verse, Iho Bahudo Bhagavan Mrityushyamitragarmani na kaschin mriyade tavad Yavadastamiha Andaga. Andaga is the personified form of death. He has been invited. Mrityushyamitra Karmani na kaschin mriyade tavad. Iho bahuto Bhagavan Mrityushyamitra Karmani. He has been invited and he is sitting there. Nobody will leave the body for the next 7 days, said Shavanagrishi. Guaranteed to everyone. Because of you, we are waiting for this nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. So please, continue. They said to him, how did Parikshit hear Srimad Bhagavatam? And how did Parikshit get Bhagavatam? You will see in the same
18th verse it mentions there. 18th chapter. So the 18th chapter, it's 11th verse. Rishis are saying this.
So the jiva sama saumya shashvadir vishadam yashaha yastvam shamsasi krishnasya martyanam amrtam hina. So the jiva sama saumya shashvadir vishadam yasha yastvam shamsasi krishnasya martyanam amrtam hina. You should live for a very, very long time. The rishis are saying to Suta, we should live a very, very long time because it is through you we are receiving this Bhagavadam, this nectar called Bhagavadam. So please explain that to us. And if you look into the 16th verse, it says that Savai Maha Bhagavada Parikshit Ena Abhavargakhyam Adabhra Buddhi Jnanena Vayasagi Shabdidena Bheje Gekhendra Dvaja Padamoolam. It's asking, Savai Mahabhagavata Parichet Yenapa Abhavargakhyam Adabhra Buddhi Jnanena Vayasagi Shabdidena Bheje Gekhendra Dvaja Padamoolam. Means that this Mahabhagavata Great Personality Parichet, how did he get released from this apavargam, pavargam, and adabhra buddhi? How did he get to that state? Through the knowledge that was given by Jnanena Vyasagi Shabdidena, with Vedavyasa Maharshi Vyasagi, which is Sri Brahma Maharshi, has spoken that knowledge. And how did that knowledge get him? Bheje Gaghendra Dvaja Padamoolam. How did he take him back to the back to Krishna's lotus feet? He's asking that question there. So, how did he realize the self, basically? That's the question. So, at that time, Suda Goswami goes to the background of Mahabharata. And he started from there when the war was finished. That's how you start in the next canto, you will see there. That from the time of the war, he starts talking about it. Mahabharatam is a story of a war, isn't it? A big war. So, normally, if you study Mahabharatam, generally people won't take notice of Bhagavad Gita. They'll get more attracted by the story of the Mahabharatam, isn't it? And every time when you read whole Mahabharatam, rarely people will find some interest in the Bhagavad Gita there. It's very unusual. Suppose an ordinary person who has no knowledge of the Vedic literature, if you give him a whole Mahabharatam, he won't be very interested in the Bhagavad Gita part of it. He will read the story from beginning to end. And there's hundreds and hundreds of stories there. One supported by another one, supported by another one, like that it goes and on and on and on. So, at the end, if you ask him, what did you enjoy in Mahabharatam? He will tell you about all the wars and fighting and quarrels that has happened there. And he would not have picked up, Bhagavad Gita or this another place where spiritual knowledge is spoken, Sanal Sujadiyam. Sanal Sujada Maharshi giving transcendental knowledge to Dhritarashtra. Then again, Vidura talking to Dhritarashtra, Vidura Niti it is called. So he may not have noticed that even. An average person, you are saying. He won't give any attention to Bhagavad Gita or Sanal Sujadiyam or to Vidura Niti. But he will remember all the other things in the Mahabharata. Where the war happened, who all got killed, who got killed the first day and who got, how, all the different aspects of the war and things like that, he would have got absorbed in that. He would not have got absorbed in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Sanal Sujadiyam or in the Vidura Niti, isn't it? So, when Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote Mahabharatam, he found out this problem. He took a lot of effort to write that book. 125,000 verses. It's never in the history of a book has been written like this. So what did he do after writing all that? He said, he put both his hands like this on top of his head like this. Urdu Bahu, he says, both hands together. He says, Na kaschal shrunoti me dharmascha arthascha kamascha sa dharme kim na sevyate. I have spoken about dharmam such depth in this Mahabharatam, artham kamam, everything. And still, why people don't take to dharmam? He is asking the question. He himself got frustrated after writing Mahabharata. He felt frustrated about that. So, because he noticed that everyone who has read Mahabharata, all they are remembering is about quarreling and fighting. What happened in the family fight, isn't it? Between Kauravas and the Pandavas. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi says here that in this Mahabharata, all I have spoken is about dharmam. But why people are not getting affected by that still, in spite of the fact I have given all these examples. And Vedavyasa Maharshi asked this question to whom? Sri Narada Maharshi. When Narada Maharshi came to see him, he asked this question. And when Narada Maharshi replied that, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see, he was a little irritated by that question, when he asked that question. So that's why, if you look at the words there, in the fifth chapter, in the first canto, Jugupsidam, he says. Jugupsidam means disgusting. Jugupsidam, 15th verse. Jugupsidam dharma kradenu shasata subhava rattasya mahan vyadikrama yadvakyado dharma mitidharastito namanyade tasya nivaranam janaha. He says Jugupsidam. Jugupsidam means, Narada Maharshi is saying this to Vedavyas. He says to him, you say that you have spoken about dharma, but all you have done is, all you have, what you have spoken, it has confused everybody. Because it is very difficult when you read Mahabharata and to come up with a proper answer, your doubts about dharma doesn't go away still. You still is very confused about everything. So, he says here that sabhava raktasya mahan vedikramam. You have to know the people who are reading Mahabharata, he said. That's how he put it. You have to know the people who are reading Mahabharata. Why did he say like that? Because Svabhava Raktasya Mahan Vidikrama, he says there that people will pick up from the book what suits them. That's the way the world is. People will pick up from the book what suits them. What they want, they will take it from the book. And they have understood that you wrote this book, and they said that if you engage in dharmam, then you will get all things what you require, looking for sense gratification. Sense gratification. And because of that, they will read Mahabharata and say that we'll follow the dharmam as long as it is giving us our sense enjoyment. Everything what we need for sense enjoyment. Therefore, what will happen? They will not come to self-realization. They won't come to self-realization. So, therefore, Narada Maharshi says to him, you have to bring Brahma Vidya there, not dharma. Brahma Vidya you have to talk about. And normal people's, general people's impression is that this topic called Brahma Vidya cannot be understood. Is it not? It is like that. As soon as Krishna talks about Brahma Vidya, we all withdraw from the scene. If it is something related to some sense gratification or some fun or whatever, entertainment or whatever, people will listen. But as soon as you talk about Brahma Vidya, the way Krishna has spoken to Uddhava or to Arjuna, if you start talking about that, people think, oh, it's a bit too much. We can't handle that, isn't it? Then they will have to go for a retreat or something to get escape from the Brahma Vidya. So, Brahma Vidya's problem is that. So, but if you tell the people things what they know, it means that tell them certain instructions that, oh, you should get up in the morning early and then attend Mangalarati, engage in the deity worship, and some prayers to pray at the time of the singing the arati, kirtan together, and some story like moral instructions and some kind of things related to the history where it is giving you some spiritual understanding, or to tell them that, oh, you chant your 16 rounds first. People like all these things more than anything else. Engage in your chanting your Gayatri, Anushtanam, and controlling your diet for prasadam is concerned. And instructions like this, people like it. They take it. You will always notice this. Those instructions given, they will absorb it. General class of people, I'm saying. If a spiritual master tells the people, that is why spiritual masters also adjust their instructions in that way, to suit the audience, that they'll tell them things like this, that, oh, you follow the four regulative principles, they are important. They will discuss that seriously. And then they'll tell you about chanting the 16 rounds. And they'll tell you, go on a parikrama, it's very good. Or come for this seminar, we will discuss, we will have an overall view of the Mahabharatam, or a taster session of the Bhagavatam, or something like that, to keep you in your level. Knowing your level is not very, very higher than that. So that is the nature of the people, to accept that what fits in with their mind, fits in with their mind. If you tell them, oh, we are going to have a seminar on Brahmavidya, and if you say, please come for that, you won't, one person won't turn up. Not one person will turn up there. So, this Brahmavidya, its nature is like that. It is not very attractive to people. So, and you talk about Brahmavidya, first you are telling them, oh, you have to control your senses and the mind first. As soon as you say that, so then they will ask you, what do I have to do for that? They will ask the next question. So, so instead of saying that, what do we do? First we tell them about the different kinds of austerities we have to perform. So many appearance and disappearance days where you have to fast, and Ekadashi you have to follow. And you give the instructions how to follow Ekadashi, people will like it. You will notice that. They will enjoy that. Oh, and they feel happiness that they can do it. And if you tell them that to control the senses, you have to follow the religious principles, and then they will follow it to some extent. But if you tell them only follow the religious principles, dharmam, then what will happen? They will be confused. Just like somebody asked you, you decided to buy a car for someone, and you bought a car and gave it to him, but you didn't tell him where to go with the car. Then what will happen? It's the same. Because only if he knows the goal, then he will have interest to drive. Otherwise, he'll just mess around with the car here and there, and no purpose will be saved. So similarly, margam, or the path alone is not sufficient. The goal has to be spoken. Goal has to be spoken. If it is not done, Vedavyasa, Naramarshi told him, you don't have to explain to them about the path, about the route. You have to speak to them about the goal. You see in spiritual life how it is. It's different. Generally, we like the path. We are not very clear about the goal, is it not? That's why we'll go on going through whichever path anybody pulls you in this way, that way, you'll go in that direction. But here, process, the path is not important. The goal is important. It is in the Bhagavad Gita also exactly the same way. Yeah. Vasayalpmiyavuddhi egeha kurunandana bahubushaka anandascha buddhayo avyavasayina. That's that. It says so. So, so that is why he mentions there, if you look at the 14th verse, tathonyadha, 14th verse in the 5th chapter, 1st canto, tathonyadha kinjana yadvivakshada pradagdrashastal kradarubanamabhi na kutrajal kvabhijadustida madirlabheda vadahada navivaspadam tathonyada kinjana yalvivakshada. Narada Maharshi's instructions to Vedavyasa. Pratakdrishastal kradarubanamabhi na kutrajal kvabhijadustida madirlabheda vadahada navivaspadam. That instead of talking about Krishna, about the goal, and about bhakti, if you start talking about some other silly things, then people will go and catch on to that. That's the problem. In spiritual life, we have to be very, very careful about this one problem. Instead of talking all the time about Krishna and Krishna's words and discussing about what Krishna wants us to understand, if you turn the attention to something else while talking about Krishna, people will go and hold catch on that instead of getting all of the important message. So you can see this even in Salsangam also. Even a small joke is sufficient. While you leave this room, you will only remember that joke. Some silly joke I have spoken, say something, some stupid thing. But when you leave this room, you will remember that, but you won't remember anything else what I have spoken here. That is a sad thing. That is what he is saying. So say for example, 4 hours he is talking here, and for 5 minutes, if I have spoken something to make you laugh or smile, you will only remember that when you leave this room. You won't remember anything else, other things are spoken. So, when it is like that, Vedavyasa has been told, Narada Maharshi says to him, when it is like that, if you continuously tell the people everything about this world, worldly matters, and only once in the process you mention to them that you have to realize the self and you are actually spirit soul, and if you are not this body, are they going to listen? In 4 hours, we have talked a lot of things about this world, worldly matters. And then in the middle somewhere once I mentioned that you are a spirit soul, you are not this body. That will not stay. That will not stay. You will never even remember that. So, what to talk about? Even if you talk about 3 hours and 45 minutes spiritual matter, and 5 minutes if I have spoken the joke, you will remember that 5 minutes joke. Not the message of the rishis, what is in the Bhagavatam. Even if he has spoken for about 3.5 hours about that. So therefore, Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, never come down from that. Never come down from that. Because the nature of the mind will go and get hold of that joke. That's the problem with the mind. That is why you will see this traditionally, Puranam, when they were spoken, they will never joke. It is in the modern tendency now. You will see many people have taken this approach to entertain the audience. And then the audience, when they go, they say, oh, it was very nice. He made so many nice jokes, they're saying. It was such a nice, very interesting it was. I see this all the time, you can see this. That they'll go and make the people laugh, saying so many nice things, and they relish it. And when the person leaves after the lecture or whatever that was happening, they are saying, oh, it was very good. We enjoyed that, they say. It was not for your enjoyment this thing is spoken. It's not for your enjoyment. But they will always say this. Oh, we enjoyed that. It was a nice talk by Swami or so, whatever it was. It's a nice talk, they say. Enjoyed it. So, why did Narada Maharshi say that to Vedavyas? He says to him, never come down from that. That if you say something else, the mind will go and get involved in that. And from that what will happen is, many more namarupam will come from that. More names and forms will come, and desires will come from that. And if you give some indication of something else in your conversation, therefore, they have to come out of that. Building up new sankalpam. Suppose if you speak something, for example, generally, when we have discussing Bhagavatam, you notice thing that the enjoyment in the heavenly planets, the facilities available in the heavenly planets. If you talk about that in detail, so many things, you will only be attracted by that rather than the self-realization. That is the difficulty with the mind. Mind will get attracted, oh, there is. Then they will say, we will have Krama Mukti rather than the Sadhya Mukti. Sudhyamukti and Kramamukti, you know, in the second canto, instantaneous liberation and gradual liberation. As soon as you hear about the facilities of the happiness in the heavenly planets, you will say, I don't want to go back to the spiritual world now. Let me visit all these places where there are so many things going on there. And so there is Purana, Pauranigas, or people who are speaking from the Puranam, they will sometimes talk about that, but they will try to keep it to the very minimum. So, because Lakshyam, the goal is not heavenly planets. Similarly, the problem is that if you talk about all those things, similarly hellish planets also, you'll get attracted to it more. You'll start thinking, what all happening there? The mind will start working. So, with that, different sankalpam will build up inside. With the sankalpam, abhimanam, ahankaram will also build up. So, without showing any other goal, we have to get the Brahma Vidya to a person. Otherwise, the mind is like a ship which is wrecked in the wind, in the ocean, how it is wandering around in different directions. The similar way the mind will start going. Similarly, this tattva-jnanam, knowledge of the tattvam, if it is not there, this mind, if the tattva-jnanam is not there, whatever sadhana you do, whatever anushtanam you do, the mind will still wander around. If the knowledge is not there, proper knowledge, goal, understanding. That is what he is saying there. Tadonyada kinjiva kinjana yadvivakshata prithagdrashastal kritarupanam abhi. You will go and get hold of some namarupam in that process. Nakutra silkwachi kwapicha dustidam adirlabheta vatahadanaviri vaspadam. Like a ship that is lost in the deep sea, wandering around without any direction, the mind will take you in all kinds of direction. It is a very important principle while discussing Bhagavatam that we have to be always focused on the goal and don't bring too many topics from outside and mix it with the transcendental knowledge, with the Brahma Vidya. That is the message there. And this is the instruction Narada Maharshi gave to Vedavyas. While discussing, it's same thing with Bhagavad Gita also. While discussing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we should not make it a topic to make your attention go away in different directions. It has to be focused into that one point goal, one goal, which is self-realization. So therefore, Narada Maharshi says, talk about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, and keep always Krishna as the goal. Krishna is the goal. And through that, knowledge, renunciation and devotion, let these three things develop in a person. So, for such a person, it is for him, only a person who is like that, for him Srimad Bhagavatam is Nigama Galpadaror Galidam Bhalam Shugamukha Namradadravasam Yudam Pivada Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Resigabhu Vipavukaha. Only in such a person Bhagavatam will be effective. You can see our nature is that when we want to talk from Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes we have this tendency also in us to bring so many topics from the world and talk in the Bhagavatam class. Is it not? You may have observed that yourself. And you may think that what connection has it got with the Bhagavatam? What will happen? Suppose something is spoken about politics or business or even science or technology, the possibility is that your mind will go in that direction and will start thinking in that way. What does the science say? What's the science say? This is how the mind goes. Science is saying that the sun planet is distant from the moon planet. Bhagavatam says sun planet is closer than the moon planet. That's enough to drop the bomb. You'll go home and you'll start looking into web first, verifying through internet. Bhagavatam is saying like this, and the science is saying like this. And then you start thinking, how to bring it together. Bhagavatam is saying one thing, and internet is saying something else, or Shastram is saying something else. This applies to everything, is it not? Everything what we say in the Bhagavatam, you will start verifying with others. And what happened? The goal has gone. You have lost the goal track. Your mind has gone in another direction. Mind has gone in another direction. That is exactly what Narada Maharshi is saying to Vedavyas. Never do that. Don't bring anything in relationship with the world to Srimad Bhagavatam. Speak and only talk about Krishna. By hearing about, people will develop bhakti, renunciation, knowledge and devotion. Only that should be spoken. And that is how it was presented to Vedavyas. So, Nigama Kalpataror Bhalidam Bhalam. And that in Ayurvedam also they have a system like that. There are three different seeds. They grind it together, mix it together and feed it. And similarly, Bhakti Jnana Vairagyam, you have to grind it together and give it as a paste, as a medicine to the patient. Bhakti Jnana Vairagyam should be there to the patient. That's what the medicine for. So, and if you do that, because they say that Ayurvedam, we say for the body we have these three problems. Air, bile and mucus, isn't it? Vadam, pittam, kapham. Similarly, our problem is sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam. So, in order to free ourselves from these three modes of material nature, these bhakti jnana vairagyam, they should be mixed together and fed to a person. That's the way to free him from the three modes of material nature. It's similar to the body. Like Ayurvedam says, vadam, pittam, kapham, air, bile and mucus, for which they have these three medicines, three different fruits they are from the in Ayurveda. They dry that, those fruits, and then they grind it, make it a powder, and they mix all the three together, and they feed the patient with that. If you take that, this air, bile and mucus will come to a proper balanced state. Similarly, sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam is in our mind and the brain everywhere. That three modes of nature, to take it out from inside, Bhakti, Jnana, Vairagyam are the three fruits we have to mix together and to feed the patient for that. So, this is what he told Vedavyas, who Narada Maharshi told this. And to write that, story of Parikshit has been taken as the basis. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi, how did he create Bhagavatam? What he did was, he took Brahma Vidya and he took Krishna Katha and blended it together. That is Bhagavatam. He took Brahma Vidya from Vedanta Sutram, Veda, Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads, blended that with Krishna Katha. That is what Bhagavatam is. This blending, that is Bhagavatam. Because when it was given as Brahma Vidya, nobody was taking it. But when it was mixed with Krishna Katha, it became very relishing, tasty. And that is what it has happened. So what he has done is, Brahma Vidya and Krishna Katha, he has put it together. He has put it together. And that is why it is said that this was written in the Samadhi state. Vedavyas wrote it in the Samadhi state. That, what does that mean? It wrote in Samadhi state means, Samadhi state, there is two things. One, you have no kartratvam. I am the doer. And secondly, you have no bhoktrutvam, I am the enjoyer. In our conditioned state, everything what we do, we have this problem. Kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. In samadhi state, there is no kartrutvam, there is no bhoktrutvam. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer is not there. So that is why that this Bhagavadam has been spoken in that state. And after writing all that, he thought, whom should I give this to? And then he goes to Sukadeva Shubhabrahmarshi, isn't it? Shubhabrahmarshi, even before he heard Bhagavadam, he was situated in the highest transcendental state, is it not? That was his state. Even before hearing Bhagavadam, he was Brahmanishta. Brahman realized a person he is. Purna Brahmanishta or Jivanmukta state he was. So, it is to him Vedavyas has given that. And when, then Shubhabrahmarshi decided to give that to Parikshit later. Just like from one lamp, you light another lamp. You take the wick from this and light the next lamp. Take the wick from that and light the next lamp. In this way, Srimad Bhagavatam is burning. And like Diwali times when you light one lamp to another lamp, number of lamps are kept And with one lamp you keep on lighting, isn't it? So similarly, from Shuka Brahmarshi, Sudeva Goswami, we need a person who will hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and that person should be ready for it. Should be ready for it, to hear Bhagavatam. And a person is ready for Bhagavatam, you know when? When he is in the womb of the mother. That's when he is ready. Because once you have come out, you're gone. Imagine us. That's why it's not finding any taste in that for us now. At the age of 50 and 60, we are taking the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, it's a struggle. It's a big struggle. But that is why they knew this science. They knew this very well. That you have to give it when the baby is in the womb of the mother. That's the right place to give it. And Narada Maharshi had this experience before. Is it not? What did he do? With Prahlada he did this. While Prahlada was in the womb of the Prahlada, Narada Maharshi tried this with many, many people before. It didn't work as well as it worked with Prahlada. He realized it, that anyone who has come out from the womb or taken birth here, and then after a few years, once this ahankaram has developed inside, then if you feed Bhagavatam to that person, still it won't get a perfect result, won't come. And that is what Dhruva Maharaj example. Dhruva was 5 years old. He gave instructions to him, is it not? But what happened? He went and asked to Krishna that I would like to remain in my father's job. For so Krishna says, that desire, vasana has not gone away. 36,000 years you can remain there and then you can... So therefore, whereas Prahlada's case, what happened? As soon as he came out from the womb, he was a liberated soul. Nothing affected him in this world, isn't it? So, so Narada Maharshi prepared Prahlada from the womb itself. And not afterwards by giving a few seminars and courses and all that, much later, at the old age. That's not the process Narada followed. Narada understood the problem. He realized it, because he has tested it many times before. Hariyashwa, Shabalashwa, Prajinabharhi, there are so many examples in the Bhagavatam. He found the difficulty. After you have come out and lived in this world for some time, then you bring Bhagavatam to them, they won't listen. It won't have any effect on the person. It's very difficult for them to take to it. And Narada Maharshi knew this more than anybody else, from his own experience. That is why he took to Srimal Bhagavatam, he took to Prahlada, and Prahlada's experience made Narada Maharshi realize this. That if you don't start from the womb, it's a difficult case afterwards. It's a very, very difficult case. And he knows this very well. That, and from the womb, so from the womb itself, if you'd give him bhakti and Krishna to him, and you keep on giving it, similarly, then it will have some its benefit also. It will work. He found out that. And that is what he has done with Parikshit also. Parikshit, now where is the difference then? Difference is this. It happened in a natural way in the case of Parikshit, is it not? In the case of Parikshit, for Prahlada, Narada gave it consciously in the womb. Whereas in Parikshit's case, it didn't happen that way. Due to Uttaradevi's prayers, Krishna protected Parikshit in the womb. In the womb. But Parikshit Maharaj, consciously it was not given. Like the way it was given to Prahlada. Therefore what happened? Parikshit lost it when he came out. It was not given the way it was given to Prahlada. Spiritual knowledge was not given to him. All he got it was, he had seen Krishna inside the womb. He saw Krishna. And that is why, when he came out, because it was not given the proper way like Narada gave to Prahlada, when Parikshit came out, he is inquiring still. Where is it? Where is it? Where is that person I have seen inside the womb? Something has hit him hard. But he doesn't know where to inquire, how to inquire. He didn't know that. Therefore, he lost it and is inquiring everywhere else. He got it in the womb when he saw Krishna there, but he doesn't know what to do with it. He saw Krishna there. So the problem is that once you get some little realization in spiritual life, then you will not be able to go back and leave it behind. It will haunt you the rest of the life. This is the difficulty in spiritual life. That if we get a little realization of the truth in some form, and Krishna does give it to everybody, little things in life, and make you realize that He is there. And once you get a sense of it in some way in life, then you will never be able to stay quiet after that. So, and because it will keep haunting you for the rest of your life, where is that? Where did I get that experience from? All realization from? And if this has happened to all the devotees, you can see that in the Bhagavatam, everybody's case. Akrura could not control. He came to Vrindavanam and he kept rolling on the ground. And what all he was thinking throughout this journey about Krishna and Balaram, he keeps on repeating all this. When will I see them? When will I see them? Because the seed has been planted inside. And he could not, even though he was serving Kamsa, still he wanted to get Krishna back and Balaram back there. And that same thing happened to the gopis. Same thing happened to Uddhava. Same thing happened to so many other people. You will notice this. That you have to, that's what I'm saying. When you read Bhagavatam, there is a lot to think about it. The way things have happened in the Bhagavatam. So, Gopi saying there that we are unable to forget Krishna. Is it not? Vismartam naiva shaknuma, says in the Gopiya Gita. Vismartam naiva shaknuma means what? Unable to forget Krishna. That is the taste of spiritual life. A little taste, once you get it, then you will not be able to go back to your old life again. It's finished there. Then from that moment onwards, your mind will be looking for that experience what you had. A little taste what Krishna has given to you, that will continue haunting you for the rest of the life. You will never be able to go back to your old way of life. It has happened all the time. So you can see there that Vismartum naiva shaknuma, Gopi said. Therefore, what did Krishna do? Krishna said Uddhava there to talk to them about it. And Parikshit, you remember in the Bhagavatam, you will see in the 47th chapter, 10th canto, Uddhava goes to Vrindavanam to talk to them because Krishna knew the problem. Gopis have tasted Krishna in the Vrindavanam. Once they have tasted Krishna, they couldn't break up that relationship. That is what happens. When we realize our connection with Krishna, exactly what happened to Gopis, we will also fall into the same situation. Even we don't have to have that state of relationship with Krishna like the way Gopis had. Gopis had the good fortune that Krishna played with them, joked with them, and they had the 6-7 years of close association with the Gopis. And then when Krishna pulled out, they could not; their hearts were broken. Even without all that happening, even in ordinary people's life, a slight little bit experience of Krishna in some form is sufficient to know that you will never be able to go back to your old lifestyle where you have no interest in Krishna consciousness before. Once you have tasted that, that's what happened. So, in Gopi's case, Krishna understood the problem that they have come to touch with Krishna and now they are finding it difficult. So, he sent Uddhava there to talk to them. Uddhava Duda, it is in the 47th chapter. So, that is why Parikshit says there, while I was in the womb of my mother, the reason that I am hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the only reason I can think of is that my mother has done something to please Krishna. It is my mother's action, mother has pleased Krishna. And therefore, that grace is coming in this way, to me, he says. You will see this in the first 10th chapter, isn't it? 10th canto, first chapter itself. Madushcha meya sharanam gataya. Remember that? Forget that. In the 10th canto, first chapter, fourth or sixth verse, I think it is. Fifth or sixth verse. Think. Sixth verse. Madushchameya sharanam gadaya. What is the beginning? Dravnyastra viplushtamidam. Is that the verse? Syahila loka bhajam. What does that say?
Santana abhijam kuru
pandavana. Pandavana. Jugupsidam. Atha chakro. Gadaschameya sharanam gadaya. That verse. Rashchameya sharanam gadaya. That madushchameya sharanam gadaya. That who is my mother? Uttara Devi. Uttara is Abhimanyu's wife, isn't it? And when Abhimanyu went to fight in the battlefield, Uttara was pregnant with Parikshit. So you can see Mahabharata Yuddha war was over. And who won the war? Nobody. Nobody won the war. Because that is another message from Mahabharata. Nobody has won the war. People are fighting in this world, thinking that they will win this, they will win that. Is it not? Everybody, that is what all the war is all about. Nobody wins any war, except a lot of destruction. Nothing else will happen. Isn't it? So, and both these families also, Kauravas and the Pandavas also, they also said, we want the kingdom. And they fought each other, quarreled and fought each other. Finally, they all were dead and gone. There was nobody left. Finally, when Yudhishthira Maharaj came back and looked, there was nobody there to rule. Only the land is lying there. There was nobody to rule, isn't it? So, who enjoyed the kingdom? Nobody enjoyed the kingdom. So, when you study Mahabharata, you will see there, it will appear to you as though they were a very highly civilized category of people. When you study Mahabharata, it will appear like that. So, because when you look at their way of life, they were all great personalities, isn't it? Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Kripa, and Duryodhana, and Pandava. So, all of them great personalities. Very intelligent people also, it may appear like that to us. To appear like that. Because the weapons they have fought with, the weaponry they had, and their skill in fighting, and they were knowledgeable people also, very learned people, and intelligent people. But you know what Krishna says about them? What he told about these people? He says to them that in our parampara, there was never Kshatriyas like this, he said. He was so angry about them. Remember that also. Don't look into one side only of the Mahabharata. Mahabharata, when you read, you are thinking that Mahabharata was a very highly advanced civilization, no doubt about that. But the personalities who fought the war, they were all very highly capable people, intelligent people, knowledgeable people, and they had a lot of opulence in them, and they ruled the planet at that time. The Kauravas and the Pandavas, is it not? But between them, this problem happened. They were Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriya nature eventually ended up in this big war, and they all got killed. All of them got killed. There's a few left. Chadu Panjava Sheshidasa is there. Four or five people left. You can see Kripa was left, Satyaki was left, and the Pandavas were left. A few like that. Almost all were killed in that battlefield. So, Krishna says at that time, with a little bit of anger inside, to Arjuna. Arjuna, never in this tradition, in this parampara, that such useless Kshatriyas were there. He says about them. And that is why he says in the Bhagavad Gita, remember, Imam vivasvade yogam proktava naham avyayam vivasvan maname praha manurukshaguve bravid evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu sakale neha mahada yogo nashta parandava. These Kshatriya rulers, because of them, this yogam was lost. It was not lost till then. Only because of these rascal Kshatriyas he is referring to. Because of them, we lost this knowledge of the soul. Yoga nashta parantapa. That is why I am speaking this Bhagavad Gita again. Krishna didn't like it that he was forced to do it again, but he is saying this in a way to make us aware why Mahabharatam was a disaster. The only result of all that war was we lost the science of the soul, is it not? So, therefore, Mahabharatam, Krishna is saying, we never had such useless kshatriyas in this planet before. That's how he puts it. Because as far as Krishna is concerned, he is looking at all the kshatriyas who came in the solar dynasty before, and in the lunar, great, great personalities, Pridhu, Ramachandra, and so many others, Parashuram, and Ishwago, and so many great, great souls who left the world and went to the forest and inquired about the self and went back to the spiritual world. And look at these ones, he says. They are fighting here each other for the sake of this land without caring about their spiritual life, and therefore he decided to finish them up all. That's Krishna's point. It's a very valid point, isn't it? To make us aware, when people look at Mahabharatam, they look at it in a different way. They start thinking, oh, it's another great war that happened long ago. And people are attracted by the weapons they have used there, how the Kauravas were born, and all the incidents what happened in this fighting between Dhritarashtra and the Pandavas, how they put Kudidevi and the Pandavas into difficulties. Whole life she suffered from that, and the Pandavas, and Pandavas' history, and how Draupadi was married. So many interesting things in the Mahabharatam. Is it not? And finally, this big battle at the end in Kurukshetra, Mahabharata war, where so many unfortunate things happened, and then finally the whole society was finished. And that's why Krishna is saying to us, Mahabharata, in no war, nobody wins. It's all destruction only. It's all destruction only. So, actually you can see when Krishna said that in the Bhagavad Gita, which one? Evam parambara pratam evam rajarshayo vidu sakale neha mahada yogo nashta parandava. When Krishna said that, Bhagavad Gita is over there. Because in the second chapter, Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita what he has to say. Sanghyam and karmam, everything all spoken in the second chapter. Jnanam and karmam has been spoken in the second chapter. It's only in the third chapter, after Krishna said this, Arjuna started asking questions. Up to that, Arjuna didn't ask any questions, isn't it? And it's only because of that, Bhagavad Gita was continued. Bhagavad Gita was continued. Otherwise, Krishna himself would have stopped there. Yoga nashta parandava. This yoga system has been broken. So, because Sankhyam and Karmam, both has been spoken already before. So therefore, Krishna is saying there that I have given these instructions to the sun god. And Vaivaswan gave that to Manu. Manu has given that to Ikshvaku. And in this way, great Rajarshi. Rajarshi means the kings who have who have become rishis, sages. They have taken this knowledge and they have utilized it and they have realized the self and they have left this world. And none of them, Krishna says, neither Ikshvaku nor Vaivaswan, none of them had to take their bow and arrow like you, he says to Arjuna, like you, and come here and had to stand against your own people and kill each other. They didn't have to do it. You remember what Krishna is trying to point out to them? That you people are thinking your civilization is very advanced, but actually not. All others before you had come, you lot had come, referring to Kauravas and the Pandavas, Krishna is saying, those who had come before you, they utilized their life in the right way. They were all Rajakrishis, they are saying. Rajarshis they were. Referring to all the previous kings in the dynasty, solar dynasty. All of them were great personalities who took Bhagavad Gita's knowledge properly, and at the proper time in life, they left this world, went to the forest, engaged in the spiritual self-inquiry process, and got themselves released from this world. They were glorious personalities like Muchukunda and so many others. But look, you lot what have you done here? You come here and now you are standing each other, one against the other, with the bow and arrow in the hand to kill each other. What kind of people are you? He says to them. So this misfortune did not happen to them, he says. So it has only happened. What is the reason for that? Yoga Nashta Parandama. That yoga system has broken, he says here. So the knowledge what I have given to this world, Krishna is saying, you people have completely rejected that. He says to them, to these Kshatriyas there, you people have completely rejected the knowledge what I have given to this world. And that means the moment, reason that you have fully rejected that, that means that you are uncivilized. You are uncivilized. As far as Krishna is concerned, you are uncivilized. So, and that is the reason that you are standing like this, one against the other. Parents one side, children on the other side, grandsons on the other side, ready to kill each other. This situation, why did this develop? Because you have rejected the knowledge. Therefore it has happened. So, and you are standing here with the bow and arrow in the hand and in the name of dharma, he says. He's making fun of them. See, you're all talking about dharma and you're standing against each other to kill each other in the name of dharma, he says. This is your state. Why? Yoga nashta parandama. You've lost the yoga process, yoga system. So who won the war? Nobody won the war. Nobody won the war. That is even true today, isn't it? If you look at the war, who is winning the war? Nobody is winning. Any war if you take. Nobody is winning the war. Lot of destruction and eventually everybody goes from here. That's all. So, everybody knows this, but people are finding it difficult to come out of it. They know all these things, isn't it? So why does the war happen? And that's what Krishna is saying here. The reason behind it is yoga nashta parandama. Once you have lost that knowledge of the soul, then this will bound to happen. And in order to bring that yoga process again, Krishna is instructing this. So that is why you sa evadyam maya dede yoga prokta puratana. Krishna says there in that, isn't it? So you will notice this one thing. Big appearances of the truth, incarnations, comes when human society is very uncivilized. That is when it happens. Krishna's incarnations, important ones particularly, the big ones like Krishna, Ramachandra and all that, generally happens when there is a lot of uncivilized activities happening in the society. All great wars also happen at that time. So, like you can see, sometimes this is very interesting, that, in the shops, you go and look at the vegetables when they sell, they won't reduce the price. They will sell at such exorbitant prices if you go in the morning. In the evening about 5 o'clock or 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, when they're going to close the shop, they say reduced from £5 to 30 pence. They'll reduce it. Or they'll give it to you free also sometimes, especially in the marketplace, like in the Watford market and all that. When you go, they didn't sell the vegetable. So what they'll do, they'll just give it to you free. Take it. They used to do that often. In the morning if you go, the same cauliflower, they'll say £2 or £3. When you go in the evening, they say you can have it free. Take it away. So, in the same way, similarly, when a war situation like this happens, warlike situation develops, the spiritual knowledge also is given free. Take it. It's ready to go anyway. So, it is given at that time and sometimes they'll give it free and go. Similarly, here, at the closing times, is the closing down sale, whatever they call it, that with a lot of compassion they give it. That is why sometimes when you are getting spiritual knowledge in a very easy way, if you are getting it, so you have to be a little bit frightened at that time that something is on its way coming. A big disaster is on its way, it's coming. Because something is going to happen in the world, that is where when you feel that spiritual life is becoming easier, You start thinking like that. Because Prakriti's nature, material nature is like that. She does not reveal the secrets easily. She does not reveal the secrets easily. Because this secret of spiritual life is actually revealing to us the perfection in life. And that perfection will not be given to us by Maya. Maya won't let you have it easily. Maya won't let you have it easily. Because unless there is an urgency, only then she will release it freely. Unless there is an emergency. Suppose there is an emergency in the life, that there is something serious disaster going to happen in the world, and people are, when the material nature knows that the whole thing is going to come to an end, she will make sure that this knowledge is released faster in this world. So that is why at that time, particular time during the war, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita so freely to Arjuna. Vijnanaya amrutam albhutam varshati. That's what they say. Vijnanaya amrutam albhutam varshati. Because this Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna spoke in the, everybody wonders why it was spoken in the battlefield. Is it not? We all wonder that. There was so many opportunity before that to mention this to Arjuna. Krishna could have spoken. Or Krishna could have spoken to so many other people before. Never spoke Bhagavad Gita, but waited till this disaster has to hit. When they really realized that it's all going to come to an end, Krishna straight away spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna at that time. They give this example that the clouds that comes from the water, from the sea, from the ocean, it evaporates. The water from the sea evaporates under the sunshine, and then it forms the clouds, and it comes in front of us in the form of rain, isn't it? Similarly, there is a dark cloud there, Nityananda Sudhagade. This cloud has come, which is Krishna, black cloud, and he is pouring with knowledge to us, knowledge of the self. And Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna that way. What was the need? We will say that he was a devotee and all that, but you also have to look at the whole situation in the world at that point in time. Krishna felt the urgency to speak Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And this child, Parikshit, who is sitting now to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, he is his grandchild. Arjuna's grandchild, isn't it? And in Mahabharata war, everybody died. There's hardly anyone left. The five Pandavas and Satyaki and few of them were left like that. Everybody else was destroyed. So, you can imagine a kingdom where there is no people living there. So, not only that, Ashwatthama has released this powerful weapon, Brahmastram, to kill this child. So, and that is all this mandram, tantram, all these are techniques they have used to kill him. So, what did they do? Why did Ashwatthama did that? That somehow or the other, they wanted Apandaveyam. He says, we should not have even a trace of the Pandavas family in this world. They wanted to completely destroy that. Not even the seed. Therefore, they decided to use that weapon to kill Parikshit inside the womb. He said, Apandaveyam, it says. Want to completely wipe out the Pandavas from this planet. And you can see this kind of situation happens. Like the science is also doing very much similar things. That that something happens, the application of the science and technology in the war eventually will wipe out the human population from this world to a large extent. So, and we are finding out different ways how we can kill the whole population when we want to completely remove it from the surface of the earth, isn't it? So, Uttaradevi, it was at that time that she wanted to give up her body, wanted to jump into the fire with Abhimanyu's death and give up her body. But Krishna said to Uttaradevi that you should remain in this world because inside you, there is this Pandava's siege, Bijam, there. So Uttaradevi, therefore she stayed back. But when she started feeling the heat inside from Ashwatthama's Brahmastram, he started feeling that baby is going to die. So what did he do? He went and fell at Krishna's lotus feet and said to him that Pahivahi Maham Yogin Dehadeva Jagatpade Nanyantua Tabayambashe Yatramati Parasparam. In the first canto you can see that. So it is the same situation, Gajendra also. Initially Gajendra tried on his own, is it not? When the crocodile caught his leg. Gajendra was pulling back, couldn't do anything about it. And all the other elephants who were with him also tried to help him, did not work. So, and then he surrendered. Draupadi also had a similar situation. Dhritarashtra and all others, were Dushasana and all that, all of them were present there. Dhritarashtra was there, Bhishma was there, Sahadeva was there, but Draupadi asked for their help when she was disrobed by Duryodhana and others, Dushasana and others, that she couldn't do anything. Nobody came to help her. It is at that time she said, Krishna Krishna Mahayogin, addressing Krishna like that, pray to Krishna. So Uttaradevi from the first moment itself surrendered to Krishna and took the shelter. Pahi Bahi Mahayogin Deva Deva Jagalpade. So this particular surrender of Uttaradevi is called Jnana Sharanagati. Jnana Sharanagati means, if you have no knowledge, you can't do Sharanagati like the way Uttaradevi has done. Uttaradevi had proper knowledge in her. That is why she did not go anywhere else for help. Did you notice that? All the Pandavas were there. They were all great people, weren't they? Arjuna was there, Bhima was there, Nakula, Sahadeva and Yudhishthira, all were there. But instead of going to anybody, she went directly to Krishna for the shelter. And this would not have happened had Uttaradevi did not have the knowledge inside. So therefore, Uttaradevi Sharanagati in the Srimad Bhagavatam is way above Draupadi, Gajendra, Ambarish or anyone else. That's why it's called Jnana Sharanagati in that particular way. So Sharanagati means, surrender means that this person is going to protect me. I will be protected, that full faith. And so it is no point in asking somebody who themselves are going to die. That sense of intelligence, to think like that. When we are in trouble, what do? We go anywhere, wherever we can get help, we'll go. We don't think whether that person is going to be in trouble or he is in trouble. We don't think that. But Uttaradevi had that special intelligence to think that if somebody has to protect me, that person has to be beyond death, birth and death. And in that group who were there, there's only one person who was beyond birth and death, that was Krishna. And that intelligence to think like that and surrender to Krishna, only Uttaradevi had. Therefore, yatra mrityu parasparam, that everybody dies in this world, that so you have to surrender to someone who does not have death. Somebody who is going to die, and if I go and tell you, you protect me from death, what meaning has it got? It doesn't mean anything. Is it not? So, when the doctor gives the medicine, only if your destiny is favorable, it will work. So, but we say, oh, because of the doctor, I escaped from the trouble. Isn't it? Because the doctor himself do not know how it got cured. Often it is like that. Do you think the doctor knows everything about all the medicines, what they are writing? They know certain things and they will write the medicine and give it to you. But how that medicine is curing you, that the doctor may not know. All he knows that for these symptoms are there, this medicine. They will offer that to you. So same thing with all physicians, it is like that. You may think that they know everything, why it is happening. No, they don't. They don't. It's not possible also. So here, important thing is that the medical system also, medicinal process also, Doctors know certain things that they are able to diagnose the from the patient's symptoms, what illness they have, and they will be able to pick a medicine for that. But how that medicine is curing that disease, that they may not be able to say that. So, that kasmai kasmai cha dhatavyam yantad bha bhavishyari. Nilakandacharya mentions this in a joking way about the physicians. He said, their treatment is like this. He said, when you are sick and go to them, they will say, bring this, bring that, one or two roots or plants or leaves or something, grind it together and tell you to take it. If you take it, if you get cured, you get cured. But if you didn't get cured, that's it. There's nothing you can do about it. You may get cured or you may not get cured. Often it is the experience. Even if we make such a big beat the drum and say medicine has done this, medicine has done that and all, there's very little medicine can do about this body. Body by very nature. That is why I say, esya kasya taror mulam, yena yena praveshayan, kasma kasme cha dhathavyam, yadva tadva bhavishri. Whatever comes out will happen. That's all. Sometimes you may get cured, sometimes you may not. So, everything is like that. One medicine sometimes will work for somebody. For another person it may not work. And then you have to change again, isn't it? You will see, if you start taking a lot of these medicines, you will know this, that this is how it is. Many of these medicines don't have any effect also. So one day or the other, death will come and we'll have to go. So therefore, if you have to surrender to someone, it has to be to that person who doesn't have any death. Otherwise it won't make any sense. Going and surrendering to somebody who is also dying like us, what benefit is there in that? Because he is also dying, poor man, and you are going to surrender to him. So Uttara had this knowledge and therefore she surrendered to the right person. That's the most important thing. And Krishna entered into the womb and protected the baby. And not only protected the baby, but Parikshit got a glimpse of that protection, what Krishna has offered in the womb. He got a glimpse of that protection. And that spurti means, when Parikshit was protected in the womb, he felt that, who has protected me? And that mercy that has come to protect him, it hit him, it touched him. And he wanted to find out that this baby inside the womb started thinking, who is that given me protection here? And now you have to remember, the baby is in the womb, isn't it? Baby is in the womb. It means that baby's mind is not developed, brain is not developed. Why I'm saying this is, spiritual knowledge has nothing to do with brain and the mind. Prahlada was in the womb and Narada Maharshi instructed transcendental knowledge, it worked. Similarly, Parikshit was in the womb. Where is the brain? Developed brain. Where is the mind? Developed mind. Nothing was there. So, this is the reason when they give instructions, Gayatri Mantra, when Gayatri is given, the principle is, before your mind is developed, Gayatri has to be given. Not at the age of 50 and 60 you give Gayatri. Gayatri is to be given before 8 years old. That's a normal system. It has to be given before 8 years old. 8 is a maximum. Very good families, they will give it at 4 or 5, even as early as that. Not at, after that. After 8, it's a chance. It may or may not happen. Even if you chant Gayatri. Because by then it has lost, the mind has started working inside. Before the mind works, before the intelligence starts working, Gayatri should go inside. So that is why 5 years, 6 years, most of the people traditionally they were given. So only in that case, that foundation will stay inside. That foundation will stay inside. Similarly, this seeing Krishna inside the womb, before the mind and the brain has developed, it has gone inside Parikshit. It has gone inside. And it is after that, Parikshit's body, mind, everything has developed. We'll continue that after break. చేదో దర్పణమర్జనం వోమహాదావాగ్ని నిర్వాపణం శ్రేయకైదవ చంద్రియా వితరణం జీవనం ఆనందాంబుదివర్ధనం ప్రతిపద పూర్ణామృతాస్వాదనం సర్వాప్నాశువనం వరం విజయదే సంకీర్తనం నామకారి బహుదా నిజ సర్వశక్తి తత్రార్పితా నివిదా స్మరణేన కాలం ఏదాదృశీ తవ కృపా భగవన్ మమాభి హృదయమీదృశమిహా జనినానురాగాహం తృణారవీషుని జైన తరోరవి సహిష్ణునా మానినా మానదేన కీర్తనీయ సదా హరి నథనం న జనం న సుందరీం కవితాం వా జగదీశ కామయే మమ జన్మని జన్మనీశ్వరీ భవదాద్ భక్తిరహై దుగి త్వయి అయి నందనూజకింగరం పతితామాంషమే భవాంబుదౌ కృపయా తవ పాదపంకజస్థితూళీ సదృశం విచిందయ నయనం గళదశ్రుధారయా వదనం గద్గదరుద్ధయా గిరా పులకర్నిజితం గదావభూతవం నామగ్రహణే భవిష్యతి యుగాయుధం నివేశేన చక్షుషా ప్రావిశాయితం శూన్యాయుధం జగల్సర్వం గోవింద విరహేణ మే ఆశ్లిష్య వా పాదరదాం వినష్టు మాం అదర్శనాం మర్మహదాం కరోతు వా యథా తదా వా విదదాదులంబడో మల్ప్రాణనాథాస్తు దయేవ నాపరాం. So the age is important when these different samskaram happens to a person. That Gayatri normally is given before the mind develops in a person. That's why by 5-6 years, latest by 8 years, it has to be given. So here also, what happened to Parikshit now? Before the mind and the brain has developed, he saw Krishna inside. He saw Krishna in the womb, isn't it? It is after that his brain and mind, everything developed. So, because of that, what happens is, let's understand this, is important, that if anything, an experience of the truth happens to you before your mind and brain develops, then that experience will remain with you for the rest of the life and it will disturb you throughout the life. That's what happened to Prahlada. If you experience the truth, Krishna here, Krishna, if you experience before your mind and brain has developed, then that experience will disturb you throughout the life. You won't be able to go and do freely anything, because always behind your action, this experience will come and take over. That's what has happened to Parikshit. This is all in the commentaries, you can read these things. So, and that is the reason that Parikshit was never satisfied in life. Parikshit was never a happy person. You have to remember that. He was never a happy person. Because this restlessness inside. He has seen Krishna, experienced Krishna before his mind and brain has developed. And it kept on creating a restlessness inside, a restless nature inside. And Vidyarani Swamiji mentions this in the Panchadeshi, you can read there. That, why do you go to Salsangam, he says there. What we want is liberation, which you are not able to have it, isn't it? And normally in our life, what do we do in this world? We work hard, earn money, and somehow live here. That's all it is. Our life is that much. There's nothing more to it than that, isn't it? And so Vidyarani Swami mentions there that once you go to Salsangam and you start hearing about Krishna and spiritual knowledge and realization, if it starts building up here, it will destroy your shanti inside, peace inside. many parents, you know, that they will not allow their children to get anywhere closer to wherever spiritual topics are discussed. They'll keep them away. They say, oh, it's all at the old age, they say. Don't do it now. Because they know the problem, once it gets in, that it will have a problem like this. That somehow or the other, from inside, it will keep coming up inside his life. And that person in his life, normally, he would be living a very happy life, earning well, spending well, enjoying well. Suddenly, if you get some spiritual knowledge inside, his whole happiness will crumble. It happens. Happens to people. Whatever little happiness he had in this world, that will also go. Then he is neither here nor there. He has lost everything, isn't it? And that will be keep on poking from inside. Because he has got something. And that thing will disturb him. And so what happened then is, if you hear this alsangam, when you start experiencing Krishna a little bit inside, this restlessness will also begin inside. And then you will say that you will start early the next day to hear that, because it's from inside this problem begins. Inside this problem begins. And then afterwards you won't think about the salsangam too much. So, and this restlessness will happen in that way. So salsangam does this problem. Once it affects somebody, then you will continuously feel that guilt inside. It's a kind of a guilty consciousness inside, poking from coming in. And it is difficult to come out of that. So, that is why, once you've seen the goal, then you can't sit anymore. You want to get there. That's the human nature, is like that. So, for this baby, Parikshit, while he was in the womb of the mother, this spurti, this is what's called a spurti. Spurti means a ray of experience. A glimpse of that experience happened to him. And because of that, the baby, as a child, he was started thinking. And he took birth. But what is interesting here is, he took birth, Parikshit was born. But the whole story in the Bhagavatam and in Mahabharatam is different. In Bhagavatam it says that while he was inside the womb, these things happened. Whereas in Mahabharatam it says there that Vedavyasa Maharshi deliberately did this. He has done this deliberately. His intention was to create confusion in the people's mind who was reading it, Mahabharatam as well as Bhagavatam. You will ask the question, is this the right one or the other one? What has happened? In the Mahabharatam, what it is that Parikshit came out and he was a dead body lying there. And it is after that Krishna gave life to that body. This is how it is. Whereas in the Bhagavatam, it all happened inside the womb. Now, anyone who does not know the way spiritual knowledge is taught, if he reads these two books, that's enough. He will say, it's all mythology or whatever. They will say, and he will reject it straight away. But this is where the difficulty comes, that our modern upbringing, modern education system has made us like this. From the viewpoint, you can see that Parikshit is born just like a lump of flesh in the Mahabharatam. He is born like a lump of flesh. And it was informed and to Krishna. And Krishna heard some ashariri, some voice from the sky. And it mentions there that whoever is a Naishtiya Brahmachari, that means a Brahmachari who are completely stuck to the Brahmachari principles throughout life, if he touches this baby, then only the baby will get the life back. This is how the story is in the Mahabharatam about Parikshit's birth. And there were many great rishis who were present there when Parikshit was born. This dead body was lying there and all the rishis were present there. Nobody had the courage to come and touch, because if they come and touch, if the baby doesn't get the life back, that's also bad. So therefore nobody came forward to touch the baby. Then Krishna comes forward and touches the baby, and the baby gives birth. Baby comes back to life. This is how it is in the Mahabharatam. Baby comes back to life. And Acharya Swami says there, He is the perfect brahmachari. Why? Trilogi grihasthaya namo namaste, he says. He is the Trilogi grihasthan. Trilogi grihasthan means 16,108 wives and 10-11 children from each of those wives, and he is the perfect brahmachari, he says. He claims, Krishna is saying this. And therefore, of course, there's a lot of things behind that to understand why Krishna is the brahmachari. Nobody else is the brahmachari. So, brahmacharyam ahamspradam, Vedam says that. So, there is a mantras in the Vedam referring to that. That what brahmachari actual means is that even for a split second, one who does not move away from the brahmavidya, he is a brahmachari as far as the Vedic philosophy is concerned. That is the qualification of a brahmachari. Brahmachari is not the one. Nowadays people think that, oh, if you are not married, if you are wearing saffron, you are a brahmachari. If you wear the saffron dhoti in a particular way, and sometimes you see people who are married a few times, they have become brahmachari after that, and they say it's all brahmachari. It's not brahmachari. Proper brahmachari's definition is that one who has never moved out of that brahmanishta or self-realization, always establishing that at least always establishing the Brahman, he is a brahmachari, not otherwise. So that means one who never comes to the platform of the mind, always in the platform of the soul, such a person. And that only Krishna could say that. Nobody else could say that. Not even the rishis who are present there, they couldn't see that. Therefore, when Krishna picked up the baby came back to life. Parikshit came back to life. This is how the Mahabharatam story is. So, the story is different in Bhagavatam as well as in the Mahabharatam, isn't it? So, whereas in the Bhagavatam, that baby was given life while inside the womb. So, why did Vedavyas write like this? Same person wrote both, Mahabharatam and Bhagavatam. So, what we will do is, we will ask this question and we will waste a lot of time in that process. You see how we move away from the message again. And the reason is that Puranam is always like that. Which way it has happened, that is no relevance. That is no relevance. Deliberately they will write like this. So many things you will see in the spiritual books, many, many things. That is why never to research Puranam. It will be the biggest foolishness to do that. In Yoga Vasishtham, Ramachandra is instructing, Vasishtha is instructing Ramachandra and quoting what Krishna has instructed Arjuna. What do you think about that? In Yoga Vasishtham, Vasishtha is instructing Ramachandra about what Krishna has instructed, quoting Krishna has instructed Arjuna like this. He says like that. So, one has happened in Dwapara Yugam, the other one has happened in the Treta Yugam. So how can the Treta Yugam person quote this, what happened in the Dwapara Yugam? So deliberately this has been done. Why? You know why? The reason is this, that not allowing your brain and the mind to start working in that way. Because if they put a block in front of that, in this way, then you know that you can't think anymore about it and get an answer. So the mind and brain will surrender. Will not. Otherwise, this mind and brain will create problem. All of us, we are all suffering because of this problem only. Devotees are suffering, sannyasis are suffering, gurus are suffering, everybody is suffering. Because of the same problem, they also have questions. That is why, if you study whole Srimad Bhagavatam, whole lifetime, at the end you will know that you haven't got it. That's what the final conclusion for the Bhagavatam will be. So, one instance, this only realized souls will explain this to you properly, because they will tell you this. This is how it works. That one person asked Ramana Maharshi about this. The same problem. He said, if a person dies, and will he go and take birth after 2 years somewhere else? He asked this question. After 2 years? Will he go, within 2 years' time, will he go and take birth somewhere else, in another body? Maharshi says to him, oh yeah, he totally take birth and he could be even about 75 years old. After 2 years and he takes birth, he could be 75 years old. Maharshi says this to him. How will you understand this? How will you? You know, rishis have only one thing to tell us. Come out of the mind. Come out of the time. And come out of space. And come out of the mind and brain. If you don't come out of all these things, to progress spiritually is difficult. Because these things, what they do, they trap you all the time. Mind will trap you in the past, present and future. In the time and space. Time and space. That's mind's job. Mind will trap you there. Intelligence will trap you in another way. They are all actually obstacles in your own realization. Nothing but realization. That's why too much going into the history is not good. Or thinking about the future is not good. It's not going to help us. Right now, our problem is we are identifying with the body. We want to come out of this body identification. So, Maharshi says, he can take birth after 2 years and he could be even 75 years old, he says to him. That means, keeping your this concept of time and space, don't come to spiritual life. Maharshi said this all the time. Keeping your concept of time and space, don't come to spiritual life. Often you will find this problem. People will ask such questions in the Bhagavatam class also. And the speaker will not be able to answer that. He will be thinking, oh, where do we find an answer for this problem now? You can ask all kinds of questions. From Puranam, you can bring so many questions like this. And you can ask and get an answer. And if you don't get an answer, you say, oh, all this is not scientific. We can't accept this. It's not scientific, they're saying. Who? Scientists. Scientists will tell you that. This is not scientific. What rishis are telling us, we don't want you to become scientific. That is your whole problem, that you become scientific. And this scientific approach has caused all this problem for you. You are not able to come out of it. Unless you come out of it, you can't. Don't worry about Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. It's pointless. It is a difficult thing because of our conditioning. It's very, very difficult. You can see sometimes these, you know, when they have these programs between, in the television they show this, they bring this so-called educated professors and lecturers from the colleges like Cambridge and Oxford. They put them, who represent science and all that. And the other side they put the religious people from Christianity, Jewish religion, Islam, and other religions, and then they make them to put the question, the presenter put the question to them, asking that, is religion and science, can they meet at some point? Or can science accept religion? Or can religion accept science? So the scientists will be arguing heavily from one side, saying that we can't accept anything what you are saying, because it's all not logical to us. It doesn't prove anything to us. We can't accept anything what you are saying. The religionists on the other side will be saying, well, this is said in the Bible like this. We can accept it. Why you can't accept it? They will put this from their point of view. And it doesn't come out with any conclusions. It cannot come with any conclusions. So, all the time it ends up, and mostly these presenters, they are atheists. He doesn't have any faith in anything. And he is the one who is presenting this, because that's his job. He has to do that. So he has to put these two together and spend an hour like this and produce a program and present it to the world. You can always see these kind of programs. So what does it mean, all this? The scientist also, he does not understand that he has limitations. He is only thinking that his approach is the only perfect approach, and he is caught up in that problem. That is his problem. That he does not understand the so-called mind and intelligence and all his concepts of time and space is all bogus as far as from the rishis are concerned. Rishi's point is that 1 + 1 = 2. That is the truth. Truth for you. But once you come to the spiritual life, 1 + 1 = 1. That's the difference. For you, 1 + 1 = 2. But when you come to spiritual life in Adhyatmam, 1 + 1 = 1. 1 + 1 = 1. So, whole mathematics changes. Everything changes, isn't it? So, what happened was, in the womb, Parikshit had the vision of Krishna. Krishna gave him darshanam, isn't it? He gave darshan to Parikshit in the womb, inside the womb. And Parikshit had the darshan. Parikshit was born. Parikshit grew up. And all the astrologers came and they looked at Parikshit's chart and told them that he will become a great devotee. They said like that about him. And he will be a very fortunate person. And so many things you can see in the Bhagavatam, what they told about Parikshit. You know what they said. He will be an excellent fighter like Arjuna. And he will be a great devotee like Prahlada. Like that, a few things they have spoken about him. So, what has happened to Parikshit after he was born? As soon as he was born, one interesting thing about Parikshit is that normally when the children are born, they will be very observant at what's happening in the house, within the house, isn't it? What's happening? So, and that will be registered in their mind for a long time in life. Whatever they have experienced at home in the early years, what they experienced at home, that will be in their mind for a very, very long time. It will be registered. So, what was Parikshit seeing there at home was, mostly what he saw that was, instead of seeing birthday parties, marriage parties and all that, what he saw, a lot of Shraddha ceremony happening after the war. A lot of people who died and went away after the war, their Shraddha was regularly performed at home. And this is what Parikshit has seen at home. And so, instead of being patted and being taken care of by the grandfathers, grandmothers and all that, there was nobody there. They were all gone. So from the very beginning itself, what he saw was completely an unusual situation at home. At one instance when Parikshit was born, not for a very long time after that, one after the other, all his grandfathers, which means all the Pandavas, they also packed up and left home. This is Parikshit's experience at home. He was not having a very modern way of childhood. Like nowadays it's all how many birthday parties and how many marriages you have gone with the family to enjoy. This is what the modern way of life, isn't it? We think that's happiness. But look at Parikshit's life. Parikshit already had this in the womb, this experience of Krishna. Plus what he has seen is this. And afterwards Parikshit got married and this boy was born, Janamecha, was born from that. By now, Kali has also entered into the kingdom. So, all this time, then what happens? Parikshit had to fight the Kali. Kali Vijayam, you see that? Fighting with the Kali is spoken there, isn't it? And then Kali comes and falls at Parikshit's feet and asks for shelter. And Parikshit gave him four places to stay, which you know, the four places. Dudam, Panam, Surastriya, four places where alcohol, mead, slaughtering, and gambling, and illicit relationships with women and men. So, this Parikshit, that story we know, it is in the Bhagavatam, is it not? And then Parikshit also gave another place to Kali to stay. Parikshit, the Kali has bargained for that, is it not? And he said that the place where there is too much gold, all these activities will happen there. All these things will happen there, he said. And it is after that Parikshit goes to hunt in the forest. And there, what did he see? In an ashram, a Rishi is sitting there in the Samadhi stage. And who is that? Shamiga Rishi. He was sitting there in the Samadhi state. And when he saw that, Parikshit felt restless. And he got angry with him and took this dead snake and put it on his throat. Normally we will say that because of hunger and thirst, that Parikshit Maharaj got angry and therefore he did that. That is how it is spoken in the story. But that is completely illogical. It is not logic at all, because a Kshatriya knows how to control his hunger and thirst more than anybody else. That nobody else can control like them. hunger and thirst. Nobody else can do that. Because by nature itself, their body is like that. Very well capable of tolerating hunger and thirst. Can you imagine? You're fighting a battle in the battlefield. You're fighting a war. And you tell them that, look, I'm a bit hungry now. Let me have some food and come back. Or I'm thirsty now, like the children say. Can anybody, can a Kshatriya do like that? No. They have been trained like that, to tolerate hunger and thirst so well that it does not bother them. So, this is like you say that, well, look, war is going on. They won't say to the other side, look, let me have my breakfast. I haven't had my breakfast yet. I'll have my breakfast and come back. That doesn't work like that, isn't it? Or they will not say that, oh, let me go and have a good sleep. I'll come back and fight with you tomorrow. No, not like that. So hunger, thirst, sleep, all these things, they are more than capable of tolerating and fighting. They are more than capable of doing that. So, and these things, hunger, thirst, sleep and all that, that will not disturb their mind very easily. Very easily it won't happen. And here what has happened was, Parikshit Maharaj saw this Rishi who is in the Samadhi state, Shamiga Rishi, sitting in the Samadhi state. And Parikshit looked at him from all sides. And know what he says in the Bhagavadam? Mrsha Samadhi. Mrsha Samadhi means it's an act. It's not correct. It's only putting up a show. It's not a real one. Mrsha Samadhi. His Parikshit is saying that about him. And who can sit like this? He says. Who can sit like this? Everything is a lie. Why did Parikshit say like that? Parikshit said like that because not only that, he says there, oh, he didn't give me water, he didn't give me food, nothing. And in this way, he made some accusations against him. And then a dead snake was lying there. He took that snake and put it around his throat and walked away from there. What is the reason behind that? Because you can always notice one thing. We will always feel envy or uneasiness with another person who is in the same field like us. Inside Parikshit Maharaj, this strong urge for self-realization was there from the day he saw Krishna inside the womb. From that day onwards, it is disturbing him. And when he saw this Maharshi sitting there, Shamiga Rishi sitting there in Samadhi state, he was thinking, why am I not like that? Why am I not getting it? That same experience what Shamiga Rishi had. Parikshit didn't have it at that time. And that has actually hurt him very much. It hurt him. Like you can see in this world, a rich man is always envious of another rich person who has got more money than him. Is it not? A musician is always envious of another musician who sings, who is more well known or more honored in the world. Similarly, sports also, same thing. In every field, if you look, you will see you are having problem with another person who is in the same field as you are operating. And that is what has happened to Parikshit also here. So Parikshit says to him that it is that malsaryam. Malsaryam means this competition nature will create a disturbance inside, and that is what has happened to Parikshit at that time. For example, in Bhagavadam, when you read Srimad Bhagavadam, it makes you think a lot of things. And unless you think that way, don't just read Bhagavadam thinking that whatever that is written in the book is the message. No, it is not. The message is something different. That you have to get it out from Bhagavadam by reading, thinking and thinking about it again and again. That how could this such a thing happen to Parikshit? After all, you would expect Parikshit to act in a little different way than that. But why did he do that? And this answer, that he was hungry or thirsty, that is what prompted Parikshit to take the dead snake, is not acceptable. Is not acceptable. The only way you can logicize it is that something was burning inside Parikshit's heart. He wanted to realize the same self what he has seen inside. While self-realization means seeing Krishna in the, it's another way of saying that. When he saw Krishna inside the womb, he was asking, who is this personality who came inside and protected me like this? Who is it? He wanted to find out. And that itself is the way the self-inquiry has begun from that day in Parikshit. But because it happened and then he got his mind and brain, everything. With mind and brain you can't find the answer. He didn't have the opportunity to find it. Therefore, he had to wait some time. And when this happened to Shamigha Rishi, sitting in that transcendental state, the realized state, he could not tolerate it. He was just feeling uneasy about the whole thing. And therefore, he did this situation with the dead snake. You can see this all the time, that when there is a debate going on, suppose somebody comes and he sees the debate and he's also into debate, and somebody else is debating very well, he will get very upset about it. In musical concert also, if you bring a good musician, a concert is going on, if you bring a good musician, what he will do, he'll come, sit there, he will pay his obeisances and he'll go. He won't stay very long. So this system, what has been created, in order that for the jiva to get to the goal, it is required like this. It's necessary inside. Nothing else. And so you can't completely say that it is a bad thing, what has happened to Parikshit. If that was not there, Parikshit would not have, you know, the fire behind it to keep the whole life inquiring about the truth. That would not have happened in Parikshit. So Parikshit says at that point, that's when you see there, Krishna also mentions this. This frustrated desire inside, that is what comes as envy. Frustrated desire. Remember Krishna says this. Dhyayado vishaya pumsan sangasteshu vajayade sangal sanjayade kamal kamal krotho vijayade. So this system that has been inbuilt in all of us, that desire, that when the desire comes, only if the desire is inside, that you will inquire further. So that is a natural way. Similarly, a king, Parikshit, should not be feeling envious of a rishi normally. He should feel envious of another king if he is more powerful than him. That is where you would expect Parikshit to be envious about. Not towards a rishi who is sitting inside in a forest, deep forest, with completely absorbed in the self-realization. How can Parikshit become envious of that? The only way it can happen is inside Parikshit there is a force operating there, which has happened from the day he saw Krishna inside the womb. So, and that restlessness is the one which made Parikshit to feel envious of the rishi there, Shaunika Rishi. And there is a person who is hiding inside Parikshit, a jnani, who is hiding there inside, and it has not happened to him yet. A person who is going to realize the self is hiding inside Parikshit. But it has not happened to him yet. And therefore, he is saying the situation or the position of the king, his job and his administration, everything is actually holding him back. His administration, his kingdom and his responsibility towards the subjects, all these other kind of things is holding him back. But inside him, there is someone who is looking for the truth. You see, this is Parikshit's situation actually. You can see in this world also sometimes, people want to have spiritual life, but the prarabdham comes and holds him back in some form or the other. And he's not getting it. Even though there is opportunity, he can't have it. He just doesn't have it. Because his prarabdham is coming on the way and putting so many problems, saying, oh, it's not time yet. something will happen in the house or in the family, and that will pull you out of spiritual life and keep you away from that. And inside you will be thinking that, well, it looks sensible to me, there is nothing in this world make any sense except spiritual life. Nothing except Bhagavad Gita and Ekadasha Skandam makes any sense in this world. And when you have inside you have accepted, but externally you are not able to execute it. Imagine that state, that's what has happened to Parikshit. Inside you have heard Bhagavad Gita, you have read Bhagavad Gita, heard Srimad Bhagavatam, and you are completely convinced that it is the right thing to do. But your external situation in the family, the job, the friends and this and that is not allowing you to do anything. So what happens? Inside that guilt is constantly you are carrying that heaviness inside. Oh, I couldn't do it. Another day has gone in life. Another day has gone in life. Another day has gone in life. Nothing is happening. And this whole activities in the world is not making any sense to you. So-called family life or the official life or your social life makes no sense. It's just a show going on in this. It is in that situation this problem comes. This problem comes. And that is exactly what happened to Parikshit also. And Parikshit was finding it very difficult to come out of it. And you can see, we also, lot of duties we have got to do in this world, and unable to come out of that. And it is in that state. So when you have seen, Parikshit saw this rishi sitting there in that state, out of the three states, isn't it? That's why in the Bhagavatam it is specifically said, that, what did it say, if you remember? That he has gone avastatrayam. Avastha, above the avastatrayam. Avastatrayam means vacant state, dream state, deep sleep. This is avastatrayam. So he has gone behind avastatrayam, and Parikshit understood that he is not in the avastatrayam. He has gone beyond than that. Fourth state, turiyam. Turiyam state. He has reached there. So Parikshit is saying, why can't I have that? He is feeling that. Because already he experienced that while he was in the womb with Krishna, seeing Krishna there. As soon as you see Krishna, that's what he experienced first himself. Due to Krishna's association, he experienced that state inside the womb. Now he has come out and he has been thinking, when will I get it back, that state again, what I had? Because that state is such a state that you can't even compare with the three states, what we have in the three states. So he has once tasted it, and now he has come out and he is asking, where will I get it, when will I get it? And here he saw this rishi sitting there in that state, and that immediately hit him at that time. It is like a kind of a problem in the mind. It keeps creating trouble inside. So it is that blunder what he did, putting that dead snake on the throat of his throat of the rishi, Shamig Rishi, that turned into a blessing for him. That turned into a blessing for him. So that means that fault what he did, that blunder he did, it became a blessing. You can't say it is a fault in that sense, what he did. It's not a fault. Because if you look at it, it looks negative, isn't it, what he did. But that negativity itself has become a blessing for him in life. So that snake, he put it on the throat, and he returned back to the palace. And when he returned back to the palace, it was burning inside. Still it was burning inside. And Shamiga Rishi did not see that when he left and went away. And he was still in the samadhi state when he left. He was still in the samadhi state. And when did he wake up? When Sringi came back. After a while, when Sringi came back, and when Sringi saw this dead snake in Parikshit's, Shamigrishi's throat, Sringi got upset and he cried loudly that, who did this to my father? Only at that time he woke up. Who? Shamigrishi. Parikshit Maharaj, when he put the dead snake around his neck, he didn't wake up. Much later, when Sringi came and saw that and he cried, and then he woke up. Why is that? Why did that happen? Bhagavatam answers all these things. That was the way Krishna has planned it. Just see, nothing is in our control. Everything Krishna plans, Krishna does, and that's what will happen at the end. And that's what has happened there as well. So, Sringi comes back, and when Sringi saw this, and in anger, he was very upset, and he was very angry. And he abused all the Kshatriyas in one lot. What kind of Kshatriyas are this? He said, and there is no Kshatriyas in this world anymore. And therefore, he mentioned like this, because Kshatriyas are supposed to protect all these things not happening. And he said that whoever has put this dead snake on the throat of my father, in 7 days' time, he will be bitten by Takshaka and he will die and go. Gave a little Bhagavatam words, a little, this big emperor Parikshit, who rules the planet, who rules the planet, his life is over with a little five-year-old Brahmana boy by saying a few words from his mouth. So who is more powerful? Imagine that also. That this, that is the important thing. That this, our Parikshit, says, Ahovayam, the king is saying, Ahovayam dhanyatama nrupanam, 19th chapter, verse 13. Mahatamanugrahaniya shilaha, rajnyam kulam brahmanapada shaujal, duradvisrashtam badagarhya karmam. This garhya karmam, this disgusting thing, why, who has done this? He is asking that question. And it is after that, that this, they heard about this thing, what he has done to him, and visasarjaha, it says there. If you look at the 18th chapter, ittitva roshatam raksham vayasyan krishiba alagan kaushikyapa upalsprishya vagvajram visasarjaha. This five-year-old boy, vagvajram, like a thunderbolt, it came from his mouth. Visasarjaha, he emitted that. And that was enough. Parikshit's life is over with that. How powerful he was. Imagine that. So, I think we'll have to stop it today. We'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jinnadiyapam Prabhupada. Jinnadiyapam Prabhupada. Jinnadiyapam Prabhupada.